Blog Talk Radio.
I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life from the moment you are born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we're going to try to bring them to you. We're going to let you listen to them, hear them. By the way, are your children still on health care? Are they 26 years old? They need to be. Or as the Regressive Party says, Obamacare? In every single thing, we're going to give you the last word, from the cities, the states, the county, the nation. So sit down. Take these 3 hours of a classroom experience, and we will make sure that you have the last word. I'm Michael Lawson. It's Friday, February 21st, 2014, and this is the last word of Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry. Thomas? Well?
We have had a busy week.
Oh, God, you know what? Please, don't even tell me you have a busy week. I was up till 4 o'clock last night because there was so much going on. You know, 3 hours isn't enough to talk about these morons.
Oh. I mean, I've been having trouble keeping up with the different gaps and crimes.
Oh, gosh. We not only have Krispy Kreme being investigated by the feds with subpoenas up in and out of his ears. We now have Scott Brady Walker in Wisconsin, who's up to his eyeballs in subpoenas. You see, he got away with the first John Doe subpoena, but every member of his staff, when he was a, I guess you'd call a little councilman, has been indicted. They just did not have his name linked to everything. Well, they have another John Doe investigation going on in Wisconsin. You see how they run that day. You can't use you're not supposed to talk about, if you're in office, you're not, and you're campaigning to run again, you're not supposed to have campaign people sitting on top of you using government property to send out information and emails to people. That gives you an unfair advantage. So there is a federal law. Hey, you can campaign in your office, but you better not be in that particular building.
You can't use the tank.
Yeah, by your own.
Put on your own town.
Well, but that's what they were doing. They brought in their own laptops to try to skirt around this. But you see, they were on government property, and they said, you know, we can't be subpoenaed because you can't subpoena our own private emails.
See, that's because the Bush administration. Our buddy Karl Rove, you know, that was their catch. They always pulled. Oh,
right.
you can't catch us because we use our personal.
Right.
The
problem is they were campaigning in the government building.
Right.
So now it don't matter. It don't matter where you go to the bathroom at. See, you go in your own house and no one knows. But when you go in somebody else's house, and mess up the floor, that's your butt. And Mr. Walker, Mr. Scott, number 84777444, Walker, soon to be, sent an email out. This is good. But, hey, let's not use our own computers anymore because they're starting to look. That's enough. That's just like saying, oh, yeah, Godfather, saying, oh, you know, hey, he needs, this is a good thing. Do you want to do what you said you wanted to do? Let's not talk about it anymore. He didn't say what you were going to do, but he knows what you were going to do. And then when they did what they did, that sort of links back if you can add one and one is two. I mean, just like Bridget Kelly. Hey, it's time for traffic problems in Fort Lee. Yeah. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
And Fort Lee's got traffic problems. Holy jack in the box. She knew.
Yeah.
And she wasn't the chief of staff. She was the second in command. Oh.
It's kind of like when the Sopranos go, let's go make some sausage. And get rid of the problem,
Make some sausages and get rid of the problem.
You got to read between the lines.
That's what Scotty boy. But hey, right. But
our boy
Sandy again. It seems that and there was an article written, and I guess it was by, I'm trying to think, it was just by, no, I don't. I didn't put it down here. I must have it on the other computer. But it says that the black and Latino applications for funding to get their stuff has been really, really rejected. The rejection rate for whites who applied for New Jersey's two main grants of homeowners affected by Sandy was 13-14%. For Latinos, it was slightly higher, 18-20%. For African Americans, it was highest yet, 35-38%. Now, the Christie administration strongly disagrees with the organization's findings. How can they disagree? They don't even know what the hell they're doing there. And see, now, this is my own personal thing. I think it's a racketeering, definitely a mafia idea. If it's not the mafia, a racketeering organization, do what Christie did. First, what they did was, and if I can get this Mr. Christie up here to tell you what he did. Christie is trying to skirt all the laws. I mean, here he is. Just listen to this. He blames Obama for why the money's not getting to the people. Let's hear what he said.
Here we are again. Here we are with Christie once again trying to blame the Obama administration for the second time in less than a month.
The entire flood insurance business in this country has been taken over by the federal government. It's called the National Flood Insurance Plan, which all of you painfully now know, NFIP. I said that there should be a new F word in there. FEMA is the new F word. We're stuck with dealing with a federal system that is broken. The idea that the federal government should be given anything else to do is crazy. Yeah.
Now, this is what he said. They should not be given anything. So now, let me tell you what happened. After, because they had a couple of contractors that went bye-bye. Okay, the first contractor, I believe, got this contract for $35 million. 80% of the people who applied for subsidies were rejected. Now, this was going on for like 5, 6, 7 months. Then what happened? All of a sudden, they were gone. The people who were applying, still applying, never knew that. They just never got any answers back. This contractor, before they left, the people said that they lost the paperwork. They had to submit the paperwork 3 and 4 and 5 times. I mean, what is going on? So They hire another contractor before the people and the federal government find out that the first contractor was gone.
Yeah.
Second contractor comes in. He's in there. Oh, by the way, the first contractor got, because he was terminated early, $10 million.
Yeah, you get that early termination fee. You know.
Early termination. But you see, but that's not legal with the federal government. If you have some, now, but you see, the federal government did not put that stipulation on Jersey.
Well, you know,
so
they,
now
they were trying to expedite things in the middle.
Right. Well, they say, hey, here's the money. Take care of it. And Chris said, hey, yeah, I'm a man. I take care of this. Hey, look what I'm doing. Blah, 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 blah. So then he hires a second contractor. I believe it's at $50 million. He holds, they're in business for about 6-7 months. Bingo. They're gone. No one knows it until the people started asking and got a Freedom of Information Act. They're gone. And the people said, well, what about what we've been? So then, or before that first, second contractor went, the rejection, the people who were rejected by the first contractor, they were given the money. But the second contractor did the same thing again, rejected another 80%. They were terminated, and they got a parting of the ways, as they call it, fee of $10 to $12 million. So each of these contractors made about $35 million, and they didn't do but 20% of the work.
Right.
Now, I am saying this is a mafia racket. That's what the mafia does. They go into a company, and they take all the assets out of the company, just like, Gordon Gekko did on Wall Street. They go in and say, yeah, we're going to save you. We take all the money out, and then they leave because the company folds.
Right, they're raiders. They go in,
raiders.
Remove all the you know, gold bullion from the building, and then walk away, and everybody's suddenly bankrupt.
Right.
Know it.
And
they're long gone into
something. That's right, long gone now. But this is what the mafia does, too.
Yeah.
So now, what did they do with all that money? Now, the problem is the federal government gave that to Christie. And Christie says he wants to blame the federal government. Well, the federal government had nothing to do with this money.
Also, these musical chair contracts.
Absolutely. Now, let's see if I can find this other thing here. Let's see. Christie. Oh, I played a Christie blames federal government. Now, here's about the second contractor. This was on the Chris Hayes Show last night.
URS Corp signed a contract for about $20 million to supervise the rebuilding of Sandy victims' homes, but the program that it helped to run, which provided grants of up to $150,000, has come under fire. Applications were wrongly rejected, and at a hearing this week, Sandy victims complained of confusion and a 9-month wait for approved grants that still hadn't arrived. WNYC found that the Christie administration transferred URS customers to a new company. A state spokeswoman would say only that URS was one of three contractors, and the state decided that two were enough to handle the job. Last month, WNYC reported that the company HGI was quietly eliminated without explanation and given an unexplained $10.5 million settlement. For WNYC, I'm Matt Katz.
Now, that was off of WNYC. I'm sorry, it wasn't Chris Hayes. But
friends and family.
But this is what the mafia does.
Yeah.
Now, if the government, the federal government, which is involved in this now, can get a hold of these companies, I guarantee you these companies are out of business.
Hey, look, we've seen this in the murky water.
Absolutely.
You know, Freedom Works or whatever that company is. As soon as, they're making money hand over fist, but as soon as the pollution hits or a scandal hits or somebody starts looking for the money or whatever, they vanish in the night. You know, they declare bankruptcy, change their name, reformed in the new company.
No.
These guys do. They come in, they're disaster relief.
Right.
And then as soon as anybody notices, they're
long gone. Long,
no work was done.
Long
see,
gone.
That windstorm we had here about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of the roofs in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
If only there were roofers everywhere. It was about
a dozen
per street.
I got mine done.
Yeah. But all over, people getting scammed. They pay. Guys run off. You know,
well.
No roof done. No equipment. No nothing. And then when you look for them, there's no such company.
Right. Well, yeah, with mine, I didn't have to pay a dime. They went through my insurance company. And they did it. I got a brand new roof. It's a 30-year roof. $8,500 for the roof because I saw the money from the insurance company. And it's gorgeous. So I'm not going to have to worry about a roof as long as I live because I ain't going to live that much longer. So here's the thing. Now, here's what Christie. Now, on the Chris Hayes show, they had a young lady, and her name, if I get this correct, is Stacy Berger, and she is the head of housing and community development for New Jersey. Here's what Chris Hayes posed a question to her.
So that gets to a question about whether this is being missed. There's three possibilities here. One is it's hard to recover from big storms, and people are going to be upset no matter what. Two is that this has been mismanaged and bungled. And three is that there's actually political funny business, as alleged by the mayor of Hoboken, in the distribution of funds.
I definitely picked door number two there, Chris, for sure. I mean, it has been mismanaged, and it's very plain to see from the folks that testified today and that we heard from last week and that we've been hearing from for 8 months at this point that people feel like they do not have a clear explanation of what the guidelines are, what their responsibilities are, and what the state is doing to help people.
That gets to the second order issue, which relates both to, I think, the folks that we talked to, the person featured in our story,
right,
and also reporters, which is if they were being more open about what's going on, it wouldn't seem so weird, or it wouldn't seem like they're trying to hide something. If they say, we put out a press release today about we are parting ways with our biggest contractor because they have failed to do X, Y, and Z.
And we're not going to pay them a settlement.
And we're not going to pay them a settlement. Well, then okay. But you fire them, you don't tell anyone for 6 weeks?
Yeah.
I mean, you veto a bill for oversight? There is no way to get any answers or data out of these people. So then you start thinking, well, what exactly are they?
They didn't put the integrity monitors in that they were really required to include. I mean, the bill was signed. The governor signed it 10 months ago. They were supposed to be effective immediately. We have not seen anything until very, very recently about integrity monitors being put into place. The other thing that was strange about today is that he said, well, it's all the federal government's fault, but he didn't take any responsibility for what the state has done or talk about how we're going to fix it. I think what people really want to hear is not so-and-so's to blame or so-and-so's to blame, but how am I going to get back into my house and who is going to help me?
And there is, I think, a kind of the whole appeal of the Christie brand, right? Was this. Washington's not working. Washington's dysfunctional. Washington is mired in partisan squabbling. They're shutting down the government. This guy can reach across the aisle and get things done, right? He is competent. Whatever you want to say about him, you think he's brash, you don't like the way he treats people in town hall, gets things done. Well, this is the central test of this administration from a sheer competence level.
Now, these people, I mean, it's just, but this is Jersey. There's so many, everybody from Democrats and Republicans have been crooks in Jersey. But this has gone, I think, a step too far. He's actually using the same techniques that the mafia uses. This is racketeering, and this is what he's going to go down on.
That's why I'm defensive.
Absolutely.
That's why it's not like some, you know, county or something.
Some
little township is mad, and they're launching investigations.
He has now used, but here's the problem. All those Democrats that went along him should go down too.
Everybody involved should go down.
Absolutely. Every single one of those small towns, Democrat mayors, you should be next.
Here's the sad part is, that just like you said, hey, it's Jersey. Everybody knows, right? They have reputations. It's like, you know, remember the New Orleans was so corrupt, they eventually had to go in. The federal government had to take over the police force. I mean, it was the dictator.
Yeah, well, now they are. Didn't they just indict or arrest the mayor, and Megan, Brian?
The former mayor
during the
storm.
Yeah.
And that's just what I was talking about. Like, during the storms, with all the stuff that's going on, you know, besides the fact that, you know, Bush didn't even go in, but all the shenanigans, all the vanishing money.
Everybody takes advantage.
You remember this.
Mississippi, what is that at?
Yeah. It's that beach.
That's a beach? It's all beach now.
Yeah, used to have houses on it. But all the insurance companies and all that kind of stuff, they refused to pay. They pulled all the shenanigans down there. Nobody could get any kind of insurance because...
But where was Haley Barbour, the governor?
Yeah, well, that was the thing, right?
His hands are bent so much they look like cups.
But they were down there going, you know, they were playing that thing where... if you had water damage, they say, it was wind damage. If you had wind damage, they say, it was water damage. We can't pay. You know, nobody was getting
the wind damage blowing it.
What was it? The senator that had a house down there that was swept out.
Oh, that was what's his name? He's gone now because they got him. He was going to be the speaker. No, it was.
But he got so mad.
Right.
He went after him.
Right.
And then suddenly all the can of worms was open. And it was him. But it took, see, a high-profile thing. But that rampant corruption that's always around any kind of storm or event or anything, that everybody wants a bit of the money. You know, let's take a bite of that.
Now,
I think that's the thing that's going to get them.
Of course. Hey, you know, Chris,
of the size of the crime.
That's correct.
His little crimes, nobody was noticing. But now it's a hurricane.
That's right. And now, Christie Walker, and we also have a new champion that's coming into the mix. His name is Pat Pope McCrory in North Carolina, out of state. Oh, we're going to get to him, but let's hear about the Walker, further about Walker.
And, Scott Walker has more or less the exact same baggage that none other than Chris Christie has. In fact, when it comes to misdeeds and abuses of power from people in your inner circle, the Wisconsin governor may already have Christie beat. Before he became governor, Scott Walker was the county executive of Milwaukee County. His office was investigated in a so-called John Doe probe, which allows prosecutors to compel people to produce documents and give testimony. The good news for Walker is that the investigation was closed out without him being charged or accused of wrongdoing. The bad news is that it led to convictions of six of his former aides and allies. That includes Walker's former deputy chief of staff, Kelly Reinfleisch, who pled guilty to misconduct in office for performing political work for a candidate backed by Walker while she was supposed to be doing legislative work. Now, think about that. You've got someone who's supposed to be doing the business of the county paid by the taxpayers, but instead, they're spending that time doing political hack work with the public footing the bill.
Now, this somebody in Christie's realm of control, who did just that. Guess what his name was. Wildstein.
Oh, wow.
And Pat Foy, who is the hero in all of this that's going on, and the one that said, who is the executive director of the Port Authority, when he found out after 4 days what was going on, he said, this is against the law. It's not a violation of the state. It's also probably a federal violation. He stopped it ASAP because he runs the Port Authority, and not the chairman of the board, David Sampson, who was appointed by Christie. Now,
did you hear the other day, Sampson?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to play him. I'm going to play
him.
Yeah, please give me a break here. Let's listen to this thing from Pat Ford. I think I got it. Now, there was something wrong with his microphone, so you might hear a little hum, but just listen to what Pat Ford said, because there was a question asked to him by Steve Kornacki about what's his job. Okay, but let's listen to Poy, the Foy here for a minute.
You were the first person to identify what might have happened at the bridge as a crime, perhaps federal or state. Did you report that to authorities, and do you feel under the circumstance you should have?
Well, look, my email, I stated my belief, which was my belief then. I testified under oath in Trenton to that effect. I believe I took the right action when I learned about the lane closures, promptly opened them. I stand by my email on that decision. I believe then and I believe now, and obviously given the multiplicity of law enforcement investigations underway, there's some serious question that there was a question of violations of federal and state law.
In the email that was released by the state of New Jersey, there was a reference that Wildstein says that Sampson was assisting the New Jersey side in retaliating against you and the New York side for your email and your actions to reopen the lanes. What was the retaliation that was referenced in that email?
Josh, you're asking the wrong guy. That's a question that ought to be referred to the chairman or his PR team.
Did you experience?
I'm not going to speak to that.
Has the chairman ever apologized to you for his email communications, whatever, attacking you?
The answer is no, don't expect one.
Yeah. Did the chairman of the Port Authority, because they got very upset with him. Wallstein texts to his cronies that were working with him, and probably Chris Christie, was relayed to him by mouth, you know, because that's how the mafia works. They don't put anything in paper. You know, it was text to them, and then they they walked over there. You know, remember the scene in the Godfather when he went to California and told the director or producer out there they wanted their guy to be in this movie, and he says, not on his life. He said, I won't give him jack, and you can tell your boss that. He said, well, he's on you on phone. I said, no, I'm going. Bad news, my boss wants to hear in person right away. This is what they did with the Mafia King, Chris Christie. They told him personally. And that's when he got on the horn with his friend, David Sampson, and said, do something about this. But, you know, Sampson's the chairman of the board. He's not the executive director. Appointed by Cuomo is the executive director. Because that's how they do it. One has the executive director and one has the chairman. And then they switch. Okay? So
it's actually one of those
it's a buy agency.
Yeah, it's set up between two states.
Right. Absolutely.
They're in power.
Right. So the thing is that that was his problem. So when he said, hey, forget it, it ain't happening. And Foy said, get those cones out of there. Now we come to find out that this guy, Baroni, everybody knows Baroni, who's another one of the clowns that quit as soon as the going got tough because he knew the heat was coming down on him. And he had to get out of there. Wildstein. He quit while he was ahead. And how come I don't have it in here? But we're waiting for a call from our new, and I hope, Supreme Court member. Everybody knows his lineage. And knows his where he comes from, and he's Judge Sam Jim Irving, and he's with the Court of Appeals right now, and he's going to be moving on, but we're going to be hearing from him in just a few minutes. Yes, go ahead.
Say something about this. You know, you're mentioning the governors. We've seen several governors now are under
criminal governors.
They're either being removed from office or they're under indictment. You know, you got everything from Virginia scandal, New Jersey, the Wisconsin. You know, you've also got even people who are sitting in power, supposedly pretty safe now, starting to look a little bit in trouble just by the policies they're being forced to do. Like,
a little bit.
Witness what, you know, all this anti-gay discriminatory laws that they're passing, you know,
mm-hmm.
in different states.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very telling that it's starting to it's having an effect. A, the criminals are literally being taken out by their own crimes. They're being removed. But even the people who are still sitting in are starting to realize that they're in a really, really bad situation.
Oh.
You know, we had just this, a week ago, Republican Congresswoman down in Florida, Anna Rivas Logan, she quit the party.
Really?
She quit. Chris, and Charlie Crist said, hey, welcome aboard. So she joined the Democrats.
That's correct. I remember seeing that.
This is a party that attacks women and minorities, right?
That's right.
She said, I have to leave. I have no choice. She said, the GOP today is not the party I joined. It's not the party of my parents. It's a party that has been radicalized and held hostage by a group of extremists. And she cited their misogyny and their racism as the reason why she had to go. She said they're blatantly bigots now.
But you see,
but it's that way everywhere. It's catching up with them. You know, look at their, you know, keynote speakers. They go and have people like Ted Nugent and all this stuff. You know,
oh
everywhere.
God.
And it's just it's sinking under the weight of their own, you know, hatred.
Under the weight
so
of their own hatred.
Yeah, it's interesting though. We've got scandals across the board. I can't, you know, can you name any Republican governorship that isn't involved in major investigations or scandals? You know,
Give me a minute. I'm sorry, I couldn't tell what we won.
Well,
I'm sorry.
There's a guy in Texas.
There's a guy.
He can't remember three things that he wanted to do.
Oh.
He's still in power, but, you know, his state is shutting down, you know, every health care clinic in the entire state. So.
Well, as long as we have people like Judge Sherry Beasley and our next guest, Judge Samuel Jim Irving, we are going to have a good chance of not getting
no more Governor
Colas. No more Governor Colas. Right now, I'd like to introduce for everybody our next Supreme Court Justice, one of them, Judge Samuel Jim Irving. Hello, Judge. How are you?
Doing fine. Hope you are. Appreciate you having me on.
And I should say that Irving the Fourth.
Yeah, we seem to keep recycling the same names in my family, so we go by numbers.
Well, yeah, but you've had some pretty good numbers before you.
Well, I wake up every morning and try not to disgrace the ones who've gone before.
Yes, that you know, and you have not done that. You have been an outstanding judge. Where are you from? Give us a little bit of history.
I was born and grew up and still live in Morganton. I was a product of the Morganton City and Burke County Public Schools. For those of you that follow Western North Carolina high school athletics, I helped open Freedom High School, which has had some success in the basketball world over the years. Went to Davidson College undergrad, graduated from there in 78, and then went to Harvard Law School, graduated from there in 1981. Came back to Morganton and practiced law here with some friends of mine for about almost 18 years. Did very general kind of law practice. Governor Hunt appointed me to the Utilities Commission in 1999, and I served on that body till I was elected to the Court of Appeals in 2008 and resigned when I took the oath of office at the court on January 1 of 2009. So that's kind of the thumbnail sketch biography.
Well, I understand that you also served as the chairman of the Committee on Electricity in the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners.
Right. Right. One of the nice things about being on the Utilities Commission is that so many of the issues that the commission has to address are common to all the other states across the country, and so there's an organization called the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners who meet three times a year and to discuss and learn about the issues that they face. And I was fortunate to serve as the chairman of the Electricity Committee of that organization for 3 years, from late 04 to late 07, and that was a really interesting experience because it permitted me to get a familiarity with conditions in lots of parts of the country that you wouldn't get if you had just were doing normal utility commission work in a single state.
Well, there would be a lot of questions that I would like to ask you, but since you're going to be on the Supreme Court very shortly, it might be in front of you, so I know you can't answer it. But,
well, that's, you know, as you know, you and I have talked before, and of course, one of the problems with being a judicial candidate is there's so much that either you can't say or it's probably better not to say, that I don't know how interesting you can ever be, but that's just the price of life, I guess.
But you see, there's as across the country, how are other people treating it? Does it look like that we're trying to get a hold of a waste, nuclear waste and coal ash waste? Does it look like that? I mean, did the commission, when you were on them, did they go into that sort of a look at see how things were done?
Well, that's kind of that's a yes and no answer, unfortunately. Nuclear waste was an issue that state commissions dealt with because there was a component of the rates that are paid by the customers in each state that was intended to pay for nuclear waste disposal. And so all states dealt with that. Typically, the coal ash situation has been one that's been handled by the environmental regulators. If you've seen in recent days the news coverage about the Dan River episode, it's always focused on the folks at Diener rather than the folks on the Utilities Commission, because given the way that the governmental structure works, the folks at Diener determine what the environmental rules are, and then the Utilities Commission at a later time would determine what happened with the cost. And so I have not had much experience with coal ash other than just being aware that there was a controversy around that whole set, the whole set of environmental issues that are associated with coal ash ponds.
Well, let's see, when is the election for you to go to the Supreme Court? November.
The election is in November. It's a statewide, nonpartisan race, which means that anybody in North Carolina can vote in that race. We are shown, we typically appear down at the bottom of the ballot. The names, at least historically, have been listed in alphabetical order. We do not run as the candidate of a political party, but instead everybody runs on their own own qualifications and merits. But it will
how
be this fall.
How do we get that change where the top of the list is the Supreme Court judges, then appellate judges, and so on and so on, and the President of the United States at the bottom? So everybody, because the President of the United States is not important as any judge in this country, any district judge. The President of the United States is not more important than a district judge. Because
well,
the district judge is with us on a daily basis.
I mean, it's been my experience over, I mean, I'm in my late 50s now and have been watching local and state and national government for a good while now. And it's been my experience, and I suspect it's been yours too, that the people that have the most impact on the ordinary citizen tend to be the local elected officials, then the state, then the federal. And so the ballot, to specifically answer your question, the ballot design is a matter for the General Assembly and for the State Board of Elections. I'm reaching here. It could be wrong, but my belief is that the essential list order of offices on the ballot tends to be determined by statute, so that that would be a call for the General Assembly.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. Well. See,
you may know more about that than I do, but I believe that to be correct.
Yeah. Well, what we see, the thing is that my whole thing is that people go in. If you look at North Carolina, look any place, look on the ballot, and you'll see it might be 3 or 4 to 1. That voted for the president, and then the judges got one piece of that. I mean,
I haven't looked at the figures recently, but my recollection is that between the end of, you know, the ballots tend to be broken down statewide, local, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it typically there is about a 25% drop off between the number of people who vote in the races for president, governor, council of state, Congress, that kind of thing, and judicial elections. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that folks don't know much about these candidates and are either not interested in them, which I think is a mistake, or may feel so uncertain about who these folks are that they don't feel comfortable voting. That has been a problem in judicial races, as you point out, for a while.
Right. Well, you know, and the other thing is that how can we get the funding restored for judges?
If you're talking about public financing, that again is a matter for the General Assembly. As you know, up until this year, for the last decade, candidates for judicial office had the opportunity to participate in the public financing system, where if you raised enough qualifying money, you would get a check from the public financing fund, which was typically most of the money in that fund came from either voluntary contributions or from a fee assessed against lawyers. And so that money was there. The General Assembly, for some reason, decided that that program was not a good idea. I very strongly disagree with that decision, for a lot of reasons that we can talk about, but typically it does not seem to me that having large amounts of political money raised in judicial races does much to improve public confidence in the fairness of the courts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing is that this public financing, which is money that you contribute to, and as you said, lawyers contribute to, this is your own money. And if you can't use it, why, you know, see, I didn't get a chance to, I wanted to call, I think his name is Ron Gibson, who's the head of the bar, and
right.
find out mm-hmm. what his take on this, because to me, it's a dead set against minorities, women, and all minorities. That's the one thing. The second thing is it's against anybody who's leaning Democrat that wants to be a judicial nominee or judge. And this is so biased, it's incredible. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, what it does is it creates the risk, and, you know, we've seen this in other kinds of races where folks with large amounts of money, and that tends to not be the average citizen, can come in and have dramatic effects on races, even though they only have one or two votes themselves, just by virtue of being willing to spend large amounts of their own money. The only yeah. people who can do that are the very wealthy, as compared to people like me, who, I certainly don't claim to be impoverished or anything, but we're not Rockefellers, and so I can't, you know, it's the very problem that you point out, it troubles me very much, because if we go down the road with judicial races that we've gone down with everywhere else, they're only a very small segment of the public, excluding a lot of the folks that you talked about who can participate, and that's not the way a democracy is supposed to work.
Absolutely.
Right. That's when we get into the problem that we've been seeing in recent elections with rising corporate influence
right.
and or you get outside groups like FreedomWorks or Koch Brothers or something else coming into a state, basically skewing elections by
right.
buying up.
Well, that's already happened. In my race in 2012, the Koch brothers spent $250,000 in a to pay for a flyer in support of my opponent.
Yeah.
Wow. They paid for it, but Americans for Prosperity, which is usually identified
right.
as their organization, paid for it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, what? And I don't know if you can answer this or not. But
we could take a crack and see.
Well, what do you think about this law that was passed that allows the public, these major groups, to contribute $20 and $30 million if they want?
Well, it's not really a law so much as it is a series of decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court interpreting the First Amendment and taking the position that spending money in support of or opposition to political candidates is free speech. Until relatively recently, the understanding had been that you could put some limits on campaign expenditures, and the current Supreme Court seems to be of the opinion that such limits create constitutional problems. I'm not going to get into whether they're right or wrong as a constitutional matter. I will say, however, and feel very strongly, that it is not good for the democracy of the country or for the court system for individuals in particular groups to be able to come in and spend unlimited amount of money in support of judicial candidates, because we all know what kind of effect that creates. It creates the sense on the part of the members of the public that positions in the judiciary are for sale. And to the extent that that happens, that undermines anybody's confidence in the whole court system. Seems to me that ought to be fairly obvious, but there are obviously some people that disagree with me.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And Tom Powers, the multi-billionaire, that said that he thinks that people, the more money you have, the more votes you should get. I mean,
that used to be true to an extent in England.
Right.
It used to be that you could, before the passage of the reform bills in the 19th century in England, you could vote everywhere you had property. We've done away with property qualifications in this country and have gone to a one person, one vote system, which seems to me to be a great deal more consistent with the dignity that we accord to each individual. And I was a bit surprised to see that comment.
Well, you see, they've gone away from that. they're going to, we've gone away from having places. Well, I got a property in Lumberton. I could be going both there. I got property in Chicago and Charlotte,
right.
Both there.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is now they don't need to have property everywhere. If they have $1 billion, they can have money everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and I think that's a as I've said, is a problem that is really very troubling. My you mentioned some of my ancestors. My grandfather was most famous for his involvement in the Watergate hearings. What people don't remember is that Watergate at its origin was a campaign finance problem. And the whole reason that the investigation that Granddad conducted was ever started in the first place was for the purpose of trying to develop changes to federal law that were intended to cope with the problem of unlimited expenditures, cash floating around, nobody knowing where it came from or who spent it. I'm sorry?
It was a lot of it was in brown paper bags, as I remember.
Yeah, or I remember reading about briefcases that had $1 million in cash in it, and they had so much money they didn't know what to do with it. And, we came to the conclusion as a society that that was not a good thing, but unfortunately that conclusion's been pretty substantially eroded in recent years by the decisions that I mentioned.
But as you say, that was all put to the side, and that was the real reason why Watergate was there. It wasn't because of a break-in.
Mm-hmm.
That was only a little answering.
Well, it was all part of a bigger problem. But the root of Watergate was as a campaign finance scandal, and the purpose of the committee that Granddad was the chairman of was to reform the federal campaign finance laws. They passed legislation after Watergate that did a lot of things that they created the presidential public financing system, which is now pretty well gone. They put limits on various types of expenditures, some of which had been struck down. A lot of those changes have been eroded, but I'm afraid we are going right back to the situation that we were in before Watergate. And at least my religion tells me that since people are have a little problem with original sin, we may likely see some of the same conduct.
Well, you're absolutely correct.
they get a little mad when taking away their multiple votes and their power. So, that hurts the passing of the buck.
So to speak. Yeah, so to speak. You know, what would you like to see to make the election of judges, whether it's district, state, or Supreme Court and appeals court? What would you like to see that would change in the law to make it better for people to run for a judgeship?
Well, I think if we are going to have judicial elections, and as you know, there's a dispute about whether we should even do that, but assuming that we're going to have judicial elections, and I think that's going to be the system in North Carolina for the foreseeable future, I thought that the system of nonpartisan, publicly financed elections was as good a system as you could come up with. And in the early years, before we began to see all this outside money coming in, it worked well. I wish there was some way to go back to it, frankly, unless the U.S. Supreme Court changes its position on the subject of rescue money in public financing systems. I'm not sure that's a realistic hope, but that's my hope, is that we could go back to something like that.
Well, what would you think needs to happen for the Supreme Court to nix Citizens United?
I don't, obviously that's a question that nobody really knows the answer to. The Supreme Court has on occasion admitted that decisions that it made were wrong and have undone them. But until that happens, Citizens United will be there. I think it will ultimately take a recognition of the potential harm that these types of expenditures may have for the political system for that decision to be changed. The only other way that it could be changed, aside from a decision by the Supreme Court to reverse itself, would be for there to be a passage of a constitutional amendment. And, of course, as we all know, that's a very serious and very difficult matter. And tinkering with the First Amendment is a thing that somebody should not do lightly.
Absolutely. Well, you know, what you're saying about the Supreme Court, and most of the time, they do not want to get into a political matter. They want to get into freedom and whether or not rights are being violated. And isn't it rather obvious to me as a lay person that my vote don't count as much as the Koch brothers' counts?
Well, I think your vote counts as much, but the problem that we face in the system is that the U.S. Supreme Court, for whatever reason, has taken the position that you have a First Amendment right to buy the biggest bullhorn that you're willing to afford, and as long as that's the rule, then there are likely to be people that are going to take advantage of it. I think the consequences are every bit as bad as we've been discussing here for the last few minutes. But the only way that I can see for that to be changed would be for the Supreme Court to come to the conclusion that its decisions were wrong. They don't so far seem to show any signs of having gotten there. I hate to be so pessimistic, but that's just the way I read the newspaper.
This court that we have now is a very, in my opinion, a very activist court. But anyway, it's a distinct change from what has been in the past. But
yes, I mean, it previously, when the post-Watergate reforms were passed, and even the McCain-Feingold reforms of a couple of decades later, there was the assumption that it was not unconstitutional to limit what people spent on elections on the theory that there was some merit to having a level playing field. Well, the current Supreme Court does not think that level playing field has any place in the system of campaign finance as a constitutional matter. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that, that's, and you can probably tell what I think about it. That is the prevailing rule, and those of us in the courts have to follow it until we're given different instructions.
Right.
Well, you know, you
fine with the whole thing. Just the politics of it. The root problem that I have with it is that for the first time, at least that I've ever seen, they have forsaken the right of the person is having the right to vote, and given it now the dollar bill has the right to vote, and so now you have a fact where a company or you know, corporation is equal to a person and has an equal vote, because they money is what buys vote. Money is what is speech, not a person's right to vote. And that's the problem I can't get my head around. It's the same way with the eminent domain vote that they got, where a company has the right to take your property from you because they can make more money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
That vote to me, too, was, again, a fringe and on the person and giving to the corporation. I just, if I'm...
Well, you know, you also mentioned something about the guy, the company with the biggest bullhorn, you know, they shout out. But, you know, the problem is what I was talking about, it's all right if he has the largest bullhorn and he can shout it louder. But what they're doing to me is they're taking away the places where I can buy a bullhorn the same size as it. I mean, that's what they're doing. Because, you know, they said, okay, we're in now, there's 535 places to vote. There's only going to be one, and that's going to be down in the end of the state. Okay, the guys with the money can fly down here to the end of the state. I can't get down there and back and feed my kids in breakfast or dinner. So what they have done is they've closed up all the Targets and the Walmarts. I can't buy a bullhorn at all.
Okay. Well, it's. I mean, I think it's just the fundamental issue is essentially what do you consider speech to be? Because I think everybody tends to agree that freedom of speech is a good thing. It's the hallmark of the system of government that we have. And so historically, the understanding has been that the Congress at the federal level and the General Assembly at the state level had the right to regulate, not to suppress, but to regulate different forms of speech in various ways. And what's happened under in the decisions of the last 10 to 15 years has been an erosion and almost an elimination of the ability of Congress or the General Assembly to regulate campaign financing in any meaningful way, coupled with resistance in some quarters to the passage of legislation that would even require adequate reporting. I think one of the things that is a real problem under the third-party super PAC regime that we have now is that the reporting is so inadequate that we don't know who these groups are, where the money comes from, how they raise it. All we know is we start seeing advertisements from groups that have these innocuous-sounding names that have people right. behind them that have very clear interest, but you can't tell what the interests are, and you can't fully understand how much is being spent potentially or where necessarily all the money comes from. And if we,
right.
And I think the only hope that I think that we have for dealing with this problem is, first of all, to get some the best reporting that we can get, and then for individual citizens to pay attention to the types of information that's generated by these reports, and then to take that information into account in their voting. Because if people know that the person who is putting out a certain message would tend to benefit if they did what that message suggested in a fairly concrete way, they might look on it a little more suspiciously than they would if they thought it was just some good government group out expressing a broad opinion without really having a dog in the monetary dog in the fight.
These guys are masters of the deceptive cover here, because I mean that's not freedom water and liberty juice pouring into the rivers in West Virginia, but they got those kind of names, They did the same thing with all these PACs. They're always
if you look at these things, you look at the name of them and it's some kind of mother god and apple pie kind of name.
Right.
But they've all got somebody behind them who has a very definite agenda, but you can't tell what that agenda is from the name, and frequently you can't know a whole lot about where the money came from.
Now, you see, and that's the part, of the Constitution, and it's perception. It's the perception, I believe, plays a major role in how we interpret laws in the Constitution.
There's no doubt about that.
Because something could be absolutely correct, but how it's presented and the way people understand it can make it so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like since we have you here with all this knowledge about all this information, that's why you need to be on the Supreme Court.
Thank you. I'd like to get there.
Now, do you have to give up your position on the appellate court?
No, I my term on the Court of Appeals runs out in 2016, and
okay.
So I can remain on the Court of Appeals unsuccessfully. I mean, I've spent most of my day today doing my day job, which I really enjoy doing, and am grateful to the public for letting me do.
Good, very good. Can you give us, because we know you judges need help with your campaign. How can people get in contact with you or come to a campaign stop that you're going to do? Because I think, you start campaigning after the 28th?
Well, of course, I'm doing some campaigning now.
Okay.
But essentially, I have a website. It's fairly rudimentary at this point, but it has some ability to contact me on it. It's www.ervin.com, all strung together. And there's a way to contact me or my campaign staff online. Typically, the events that we have really amount to going to other people's events and speaking. For example, a group of us are coming to speak to the Uptown Democratic Forum on March 12th, and I think we're also going to go to the Democratic Women's Meeting that night, and so a number of us will be there then. And there certainly will be other occasions as we go along.
Okay, well, I want you to send – you have my contact information. I want
I
you to send me all your contact information so I can take and put a link on my website to your website.
Will do.
Okay. And yes, go ahead.
I want everybody listening to remember this because I think it's extremely important time-wise. You know, certain things come about at certain times for a reason. But I think your body of knowledge, your body of work – with all of the utilities commission, you know, the committee on electricity, the regulatory utility commissioners, all these things that you've done in the past, right now when we have endless bad news from North Carolina, from West Virginia, and everywhere else.
Coal ash coming out of my water pipe.
I certainly hope not.
Yeah, well.
But I mean, obviously there are people up in the Dan River area, and you've seen people in the West Virginia event that you alluded to, and there was a larger coal ash spill in the TVA area. And for better or worse, of course, the ultimate policy decisions about those issues are made by the legislature and by the environmental regulators. But I think it helps to have somebody on the court who has some experience dealing with those types of issues, and I've certainly got a good bit of it.
Well, let me ask you another thing. This DEN, that's the DENR, is that what it is, DENR?
Yes, it's the Department of Environment and Natural Resources.
Right. Is that an appointment job by the governor?
Yes.
Or is that?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, God, no wonder we're in trouble.
The Secretary of DENR is they're sort of two. The governor has both accounts, is both the head of the Council of State, and you know many of those folks. It's the Secretary of State and the Attorney General and commissioners of this, that, and the other. And then there's a second cabinet that's the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Transportation, DENR, and others. And those are the heads of those, the Department of Revenue. Those folks are all, the heads of those departments are all appointed by the governor.
Well,
every time you get a new governor, you get a new series of folks that fill those cabinet positions.
Well, why do people who are in power, like governors, elect people who have no knowledge of what they're doing? You know, I used to work for the FAA before I went to the National Weather Service, and my boss was a GS. 16, make a lot of money. He didn't even know how to plug his coffee pot in. He knew nothing about electronics at all. I was in electronics then. He knew nothing, but he was a botanist. He was in charge. Now, he knew nothing about anything. He had to rely on his deputy, who was an electronic person, to tell him what needed to do. Now, we have this guy that this governor, and I know you have nothing to do with this, but this governor, this state's being run by Art Pope, and everybody knows it. This is coming on my mind.
Of course, under our system of government, both at the federal level and at the state level, who wins elections has consequences, and one of the consequences is that whoever is elected governor in North Carolina has the right to make a number of appointments to important positions, including the Secretary of DENR, Secretary of Revenue, and other positions.
Well, this person said a week before that we had the best system in the country for keeping coal ash safe, and then we had the third largest spill in the entire country a week later. I mean, give me and this man, he knows nothing about science, nothing. It's mouthy. This is what gets me.
Well, and of course, I'm going to have to take the refuge that all judicial candidates have to take, which is, that there are certain matters of public policy and issues of that nature that it's generally not a good idea for us to comment on, and so I'm going to hide behind that one.
take the fifth on that. But the thing is, the federal government now is involved in it, so this is going to be over any state head. The federal government.
Well, I haven't read the articles that have appeared in the paper as thoroughly as I probably should have, but it's clear that there are a number of different things going on, and I suspect we'll continue to see more about this whole incident. In related matters in future editions of the Observer and the NNO and other papers.
Okay. Well,
that's why I think it's important to be aware. Pay attention to the judgeships because,
absolutely.
For instance, when all of these committees and agencies are just appointed,
right.
They can do or say anything they're told to do.
Right.
We need people sitting on the bench that are not
yes.
This area, nuclear and environmental
right.
law, and it will help.
Yep.
It will certainly help to have him on the bench because he knows what he's talking about.
And, Judge, I'm grateful for all the time you gave us, but people...
Well, I get to see you much, but enjoy talking to you when I do.
Well, I enjoy talking to you, too. But I like to give people on my show a chance. I don't want to have them give a 30-second spot. I want them to, so people can understand who they are. And anybody listening who doesn't understand that you are for what is right, you know, they need to go back to bed. That's all I do.
Well, I always appreciate being given a little more time because I don't speak in sound bites very well. And to be honest, it's very hard. You know, the soundbite culture tends to make things that are very complicated, overly simplistic, and encourage people not to look in depth at what issues are. And so it's nice to have some time to actually talk about some of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are grateful. And I want you to come back on again because the more people hear you, the more they're going to understand that you are the judge that we need for this time in this state.
Well, I'm happy whenever you want to have me back on. As I told you when we talked in Charlotte and set this up, I like doing this kind of thing. And so anytime that suits you, if we can work it out, I'll be glad to be here.
Okay. I want to have you on once a month to the election time.
Okay. Well, just you've got a little bit of my contact information now. I'll send you the rest of it and call me anytime.
Okay. I appreciate it. That's Judge Samuel Jim Irving IV.
Right. Thank you very much.
The next Supreme Court judge in North Carolina.
Well, thank you all very much, and I'll be checking out now. Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
May the 4th
be with you. May the 4th. That's good.
And remember this, people. You can go to urbanforsupremecourt.com and find out more about it and make a contribution, please, because now they do have to run campaigns.
The thing is, they took away all that because they didn't want judges in there that they have no control of.
Yeah.
They want judges in there they can control.
They'll
say, Kolesh? What's Kolesh? I don't know no stinking Kolesh.
Okay. Let me check my Duke portfolio.
Yeah, let me check my Duke portfolio.
We need people like this because, as we just talked about some, during that conversation with him about the changes in force, even the Supreme Court now recognizing corporations as people and money as freedom of speech. We've got a situation where it's harder and harder to get people elected. And then a candidate from the people of the people. Nowadays, it's the people like McCrory who are lifelong Duke employees or whatever. It's
28 years.
They're backed by corporations or billionaires.
Right.
And that's not people. That's not real people.
Well,
coming from life. You know, it's not a lawyer from your town or anything like that. You know, that's what's sad.
Well, going from the sublime to the depths of hell, our next, just listen to this.
If Barack Obama becomes the president in November again, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year. We need to ride into that battlefield and chop their heads off
in November.
The Barack Obama gang, who believes in we the sheeple and actually is attempting to re-implement the tyranny of King George that we escaped from in 1776. And if you want another Concord Bridge, I got some buddies.
Anybody that wants to disarm me can drop dead. Or suck at my machine gun.
Yes,
you can take it whichever way you
want.
I have obviously failed to galvanize and prod, if not shame, enough Americans to be ever vigilant not to let a Chicago communist-raised, communist-educated, communist-nurtured, subhuman mongrel like the Acorn community organizer, gangster Barack Hussein Obama, to weasel his way into the top office of authority in the United States of America.
And that's his good part.
Yep. Hey, this is a guy who used to bounce around on stage in a caveman outfit or as far as a loin cloth and sing Wang Bang Doodle and, you know, Bob Winter stuff. So,
do you also know that he's a coward? He's a coward.
You mean he's another one of those Cheney type papers?
Jeff, a draft dodging, wet my pants, defecate in my pants, and even if that's not true, he still didn't go. Just like Rush Limbaugh, just like Sean Hannity, just like Bill O'Reilly, just like Ted Cochran, just like Ted Cruz, just like all these other morons out there that wear a flag, American flag lapel pin, that always appear with the American flag behind them, that talk about liberty, mom's apple pie, talk about this is the greatest country in the world. Send his kids, please.
Yep. You know,
that talk about we need to go bomb that country into submission. Send his kids, please. I had more important things to do because I was going to community college. Send his kids, please. Where were these morons, these mongrels? Don't talk about Obama. He wasn't alive when this was going on, when you had your shot, Ted Cruz, to go into the military. Where was it when you had your chance to defend this country? You know what he said? Hey, I ain't going into no war and get shot and killed. I got better things to do. Boy, you know what? Did he read that from Dick Cheney? Or his real name is Cheney, as Chris Matthews said?
Either way, it's Dick to his
friends. Yes, to all his friends. What if you're an enemy?
Hey,
what does he say then?
We heard it on the floor of the Senate. I don't know if you want to repeat it here or not.
I mean,
but you know, hey, you want to know something interesting?
Also, what?
Now, this is talking about being cowardly. You know, Ted got his planted in the mouth hole of Republican politics now, and he wants to be something because he's loud, proud, and I guess his albums aren't selling very well anymore, so he's got to do something different.
Of course.
I think it's very funny that, you know, one of his most famous songs, Wang Dang Doodle. Wonder what that's about. Yeah. But Wang Dang Doodle, which, you know, I used to, even a year or so ago, we played it on here. On the show one
time. Did we play it?
But now, all the lyrics, because we were talking about him when he was going against Obama.
Oh,
he was,
okay, all right. That was right here. Yeah.
Obama,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was going to shoot him or be in prison.
Mm-hmm. Right, oh, yeah, yeah.
But now, all the lyrics, every sign, all
are gone.
Have been removed by request of the artist. Did I say that? Did I mean that? Why? Huh? Who?
Yeah, because he had a visit from the Secret Service.
Am I a crazed man?
No,
but just they try to sanitize their sexist crap, and it just, but it's still there. You can't apologize.
Here's what he tweeted out. This is just recently. Pimps, whores, and welfare brats and their soulless supporters have, HAV, a president to destroy America.
what subhuman varmint believes others must pay for their obscenity, booze, cell phones, birth control, abortion, and lives. Good luck, America. You just voted for economic and spiritual suicide, soulless fools. I like to shoot them dead. During an interview in 2008, Nugent had harsh words for undocumented immigrants. In an unauthorized entry, armed like they are right now invading our country, I'd like to shoot them dead, Nugent said on the Fox News Sean Hannity show. Black Jews at Nazi Klan rally after spanking, after a sparkling controversy with his anti-Obama, what's this? Secrete? I can't even read it. I don't know, that's misspelled. That earned him a Secret Service investigation. Nugent doubled down on his remarks during an interview with radio talk show host Dana Loesch. I'm a black Jew at a Nazi Klan rally, he said, and there are some power-abusing corrupt monsters in our federal government that despise me because I have the audacity to speak the truth. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is brain dead. Wasserman Schultz is such a brain dead, soulless idiot, Nugent said, after the Florida congresswoman criticized his anti-Obama comments. I could not be more proud of this soulless, heartless, idiot, feeble attempts to find fault with Ted Nugent because I am on the right track. Okay? Suck on my machine gun, he said to Piers Morgan about Obama. Anybody that wants to disarm me can drop dead, Nugent said. Anybody that wants to make me unarmed and helpless, we're going to literally create the proven places that where more innocents are killed called gun-free zones. We're going to beat you. We're going to vote you out of office or suck my machine gun. You can take it whichever way you want, you punks. While on stage in 2008 concert, Nugent held up two machine guns and shared his thoughts on Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Hey, Obama, he said, guns in hand, you might want to suck on one of these, you punk. He continued, Hillary, you might want to ride on these into the sunset, you worthless bitch. Apartheid isn't that cut and dry. In 1990, Nugent caused a stir when he commented on the racial segregation in South Africa to the Detroit Free Press magazine. Apartheid isn't cut and dry, Nugent said. All men are not created equal. The predispondence of South Africa is a different kind of breed of man. I mean, with no disrespect, I say with great respect, I love them because I'm one of them. They are still people on the earth, but they are different. They still put bones in their noses. They still walk around naked. They wipe their butts with their hands. These are different people. You give them toothpaste, and they effing eat it. I hope they don't become civilized. They're way ahead of the game.
Hey, man, there you go. The voice of the Republican Party.
This is the voice of the Republican Party. This is what you get when you get Ted Nugent.
You know, this is a guy who loves to call the brave man, the wild man. You know, I just don't even know what to say to that. Right? You know, that's one of the things that I have trouble with, Mike, when I come over here. all you people. You're sitting over here. It's hard to understand you on the microphone because of the bones in your mouth. And then it's so awkward.
Oh, let me take it out. That's what I had last night. I'm sorry. Oh, you know what? It wasn't chicken. It was a pork bone. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let me take this out. But you know, it's good.
Know.
It's good.
And
that's right. I just got to wipe with my hand on my butt.
What world? It's like watching some really bad movies like 50,000 B.C. or 1 million B.C. or whatever the hell that movie was. You know,
the only thing good about that was the girl in it. That's,
that was no girl. That was Rochelle Buff.
That's right. That's right. That was no girl. That was all woman. That's right. That was Rochelle Buff.
That
and she still looks good. Anyway, yes.
This guy is
Well, listen. He's just like Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity was what you call a police chaser when he was in New York. He worked for NBC. I remember, not Sean Hannity. Well, I can't get them confused. Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. Hannity's younger than O'Reilly. But anyway, O'Reilly, when he was in New York, he's still in New York. He was on NBC. Oh, yeah, that station. That's where they gave him his first start, NBC. So he was a reporter. And, you know, after the news and sports, they would go, oh, hey, Bill, where are you at right now? Well, I'm just here. There was an accident on the expressway, and everything seems to be all right. All right, thank you. And that's the end of our show. And that would be it. That's all you'd see of him. Well, he was like that for 5-6 years. And then he'd go get coffee sometime, I guess. But,
yeah.
No, he was worse than Geraldo. Anyway, so anytime you come on after the sports, you know you're just a fill. So anyway, he then went to ABC, I believe it is, and nobody liked him. I mean, because he's a moron. Hey, but 6'4". He thought, hey, look, I'm good looking. I'm from you're right. Okay, Howard Stern, he's not. So then he disappeared, and now he comes on radio. And he's conservative. He hates anything that is going to take away his voting right. Like, what would take away his voting right? What about the people who never had voting rights?
Right.
And that their rights are being taken away now. Oh, they can drive 50 miles to vote? Why can't they? You mean they don't have enough money to put gas in the car to go both ways? Oh, you mean they don't even have a car?
They take off their three jobs to go vote.
Right.
It's easy in their mind because the voting site is only 50 miles away.
Oh, yeah.
That is just midway to the abortion clinic they'd have to drive.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was looking at
so
that.
That's what poor liberals do. They just drive from abortion clinic to abortion clinic.
I remember one time I was a young kid, 7 years, 8 years old, and my father – I would not see him sometimes, just a glimpse of him. And that would be decided because he was working three jobs. And for Christmas, I had a TV. I was the only one in my classroom. I'm talking about 1947. We had a TV. Kids used to come over to my house on Friday after school. My mother would invite 6 or 7 kids to my class. Different kids every Friday, and we would come over and we would watch Farmer Gray cartoons. We would watch Pinky Lee, and then the parents would pick them up from my house. We had the TV.
Now, you're glad that you were in New York because I mean Mississippi.
No, listen, I couldn't know. It was 1947. No, I was because I was too young. I wasn't in school yet, so it had to be 1952, 53 maybe. And the kids used to come over because I was in like the second grade or something like that, third grade. Anyway,
you would have brought our whole state
up. Oh.
We would have been within.
Is that right? Oh, gee.
Yeah,
well, anyway.
We didn't have things like technology, radio. What is that?
Electricity. So the thing was that, hey, my girlfriend that I had a girlfriend then. Of course,
man, you
girl.
Had everything.
Hey,
Charles?
Right across the courtyard, we had a court right there, and she had something that I liked, and she had something that I really liked, and I used to go up to her house and see it every Friday. It was goldfish in a tank. But I didn't pay attention to the goldfish. I liked the little the little guy that was in the diving suit.
Yeah.
The diving, he was at the bottom of that, and he gave off the bubbles.
Yep.
I love that. And I would sit there and watch that for hours and talk to her. When they didn't have a TV, so she would come over to my house, too. And her mother, when she came over to work, would get her, and they have dinner. But the thing is, now, you know, I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, the thing is
that every time you think about a girl,
every time I think about this guy, I love her, Carol. I still love you. My wife.
No.
Listen, so I didn't know her then. I didn't know her then. Didn't know my wife then. That's right. And Carol, oh, but I love Carol. Gorgeous girl. Anyway, the thing was that kids were interested in little things, I used to go to my birthday is like April 23rd in New York City. The circus Ringling Brothers Bonneville used to come, and they'd open up in Madison Square Garden, and they used to have what they call the Elephant Walk, and you go there before the circus starts, and you could go back is backstage underground. You could see them feed the elephants and feed the lions, and yes, that's the man, and they used to feed the lions, and we got the popcorn, and you see the guys, the clowns putting on the makeup and everything, and that was a show in itself. And then I'd go to my grandfather used to take me for my birthday every year, and my uncle, and I would go there, and I would be so interested. My uncle used to say, you know, it's so incredible. We take him, and there's a lion eating a man alive in the middle of the ring, a person falling off the trapeze. Didn't faze me. I'm around counting everybody in the house. How many people? Oh boy, look at all these people here. That was more interesting to me. But after I went through the Elephant Walk, you know, downstairs, it was great. But people need to understand they have to pay attention to the environment around them. We got to know what is going on. And I always thought that I needed to see the look on other people's faces when they were looking at it, because I couldn't see my own. And I was always wondered, do I have the same look as them? Am I?
That sense of wonder.
Yeah. And then I used to go again two weeks later, because I was in the choir at my school, Catholic school I went to, and the pastor used to take all the choir boys and altar boys to the circus again. So I would go to the circus twice in a month, you know. And it was always great. But anyway, speaking about the circus, we have a circus here in North Carolina. Did you know that? Did you know we have a circus here in North Carolina?
What?
Oh, well, let me just give you a little introduction.
He's just a face painted on a smile, jumping up and down and making people happy.
That's right. North Carolina is a three-ring circus. But, you know, we have some people in this three-ring circus that are managing how they can get everybody in line. And one of them is with us right now.
Man. Woman, birth, death, infinity.
Yes, is our doctor in the house?
Yeah, hey!
Is that Dr. Grace Lee Galloway? Well...
Well, I tell you what, Michael, you know, every day is an experience, isn't it?
It's a three-ring circus. That's why I had a play that
before. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It doesn't stop.
You have the top hat, and you're trying to get some direction. I mean, how do you control a three-ring circus? Well, you're not in a three-ring circus. You're in a ten-ring circus. I mean,
I have no idea. I'm in an asylum, and the inmates are running it. It's just too much. It really is.
What people don't get,
and I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats, what they don't get is that without the minority vote, they cannot win.
Why don't they get that? What's the problem here?
Well, I think part of why they don't get it is because they're so insulated that they don't want to believe that as a Caucasian or a white race that all of a sudden they're becoming inconsequential, or, well, they think inconsequential, but it's what we don't think of them. You understand? We don't think that, oh, now that you're in the minority, you're inconsequential. That's not what we think. But they, I guess, because for so many years they've been able to play the tune and beat the drum, and other people would dance to the tune that they played and march to the drum beat that they produced, they're now feeling that maybe a little intimidated, or maybe a lack of awareness, or maybe a combination of both. But the reality is that North Carolina is turning brown, okay? Between the African Americans and the Hispanics and the Asian Americans, it is turning brown. And so the vote, the minority vote, has become more increasingly more and more important. And what they don't get, and I'm talking Republicans and Democrats, they don't get it, that you cannot continue to ignore the minority, cannot continue to put aside what is important to them. You cannot continue to insult minority people and expect that around election time we will hold our noses and vote for you. They can't continue to expect that. They've got to be aware and cognizant of the needs of the minority people 24/7, 365. You know, if you go to a minority, any kind of minority function, you ask them, what is it that they want the Democratic Party to do for them? They'll say, well, yeah, how about showing up other than an election day? Because they will say the only time you all show up is when you want our vote. And that's unfortunately the truth, but that's got to stop. It has to stop.
That's one of the things we were talking about earlier. We mentioned a congressperson down in Florida who has left the Republican Party, and she cited their misogyny and their racism as the cause. And she said that they're alienating everyone, that they've been hijacked by extremists. And she said, you know, she said that wasn't the party she joined.
There's a whole lot of static. I didn't hear any of that. But
go ahead, say it again.
No, I was just actually explaining that we were talking earlier in the show about the blowback from their racism and their you know, anti woman, anti immigrant, anti everything. We talked about a Republican down in Florida who has joined Chris, has left the Republican Party now, going over to the Democrats, because she said, and she happens to be a Latina, but she said that they are just misogynist and racist, and that she couldn't be in the party anymore because they've been hijacked by extremists. But Mike and I were talking earlier before the show, and this is one of the things I think that is coming deep for the Republicans. They have sold their soul to every, you know, right-wing extremist group for votes, that now they're beholden to these groups.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting caught in the whole, you know, they've got racists on one side and evangelicals on the other side. And now, to keep any of those people voting for them, they have to go to be, so to speak. And they keep doing and saying worse and worse things every day.
Well, you know, I have no hope for the Republicans. I really honestly don't think that they'll ever get it. But I do have hope for the Democrats. And I think that slowly but surely we will have to drag the Democratic Party kicking and screaming into the real world. They don't, you know, I'm not saying all of them don't get it, but you do have a group of people that just don't get it. And it's a shame. But there are people that believe that for example, here's a perfect example, that if a woman runs for office, just because she's a woman, she's got to be credible, that she's automatically credible. Okay, well, I have a lot of arguments for that one, because look at Renee Elman. You know, she's a woman, but she certainly isn't credible. All right? Let's look at Susan Collins from Maine. She is sometimes credible, but not always credible. Let's look at Michelle Bachmann. She's a woman, and she is certainly not credible. But unfortunately, that's the theme. You know, if you're a woman and you run, other women will automatically vote for you because you're a woman. And
yeah.
I don't want anybody, if I ran for office, I don't want anyone voting for me because I'm a woman. I want somebody voting for me because I have merit, because I have credibility, because my ideas are good, you know, that
right.
I am on solid footing. It doesn't happen like that. So we have work to do, a lot of work to do. If we're going to stop people from voting against their own best interests, and Michael, you and I have talked about this a long time, then we have
yeah,
to stop. Yeah, go ahead.
Why do women of all people vote against their own self-interest? I just can't. They will. I mean, in Pennsylvania, I was just looking at it yesterday. They've closed up 90% of the abortion clinics.
Yeah.
They have in the southernmost western part of the state. There is only one. The rest of them are all concentrated around the Philly area. There's about six or eight of them there left. None in the rest of the state. And then they just, looking at it last night, they just arrested this woman. She's going to get 15 years because she ordered the pill for her daughter from Canada, I believe, and she used it. But the daughter had complications, so she had to go to the emergency room, and they reported in the emergency room, and she's arrested now. She could get 15 years.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Is this incredible or what?
It's absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
You can't even order the pill. They don't want you to even order the pill. Well, what do they want, people? Just to use the rhythm method? Why are they still selling prophylactics in the drugstore? Why are they selling that? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, because the prophylactics are only for the men. I mean, it's okay for men to have a lot of sex and use the prophylaxis, but it's not okay for women. Again, this goes back to misogyny. You know, it absolutely goes back to that women, for some reason, we are too stupid to be able to make up our own minds. And unfortunately, you hit the nail on the head, Michael, unfortunately, when women vote against their own best interests, we are simply reinforcing that we are indeed too stupid to make up our own minds. We are letting men, we are letting fools dictate to us how we should vote, and they're using religion as their magic wand. And that's got to stop. That has to stop.
Yeah, it has to stop. When women do control the money in the world and in this country, they do control it. That means they control the vote, if you're talking about Citizens United. So why don't they do it? Why is a woman going to sit there like a Collins or these other people and Collins didn't vote that way, but why are these other people like Bachmann and that cross-eyed Fox here in North Carolina?
Virginia Fox, yeah, absolutely. The one who got dropped in the head as a child, I think. Either that or she got ticked, but that's what I tell everyone.
Well, you saw that. What was it, National Boone's vacation? He said, oh, yeah, she cross-eyed. She dropped her head when she was a child. Then he saw at the end of the story. So, yeah, she was kicked in the head with a mule with her eyes uncrossed. Maybe that's what Fox is.
Well.
But, you know, the thing is, or maybe that did happen to her. I don't know.
You know, who knows, right? But the thing is, it's such a long, hard road. And right now, of course, we're going through all these battles. And right now we have to – here's another perfect example. Okay, so Patsy Kiefer is the first vice chair of the Democratic Party. But she doesn't use her real last name. Her real last name is Acock. And it's the Acock family. Remember when Vance Acock, the Vance Acock dinner?
Yes.
The spring dinner used to be called the Vance Acock dinner until
Absolutely.
People like Tony Mingo got all crazy and said, wait a minute, why are we honoring two racists and two misogynists?
That's right. That's right.
You know? And so we dispense with that. Now it's called the Western Gala. But Patsy Kiever is an Acock. All right?
Yeah.
And as much as she may be a very nice person, and I happen to think she's a very nice person, the reality of it is I think she's getting a bum spear. And the other thing is that she also, when she was running for against Patrick Henry, she said she would not endorse President Obama. Now, you know, when her name was brought up, she was nominated from the floor for first vice. That did not give people enough time to figure it out. And so she won. But had
right.
people known that she had not endorsed, she had said she was not going to endorse President Obama, she would never have been first vice. She wouldn't be first vice today. But this is what I'm saying. People aren't completely open. They don't tell you everything. All right? Renee Elmers came in as a Republican, and she ran on, oh, she's a nurse, and she's, you know, along the compassionate conservative line. And yes, she was a Tea Party favorite also, but she ran more along that conservative, you know, compassionate conservative and the nursing, that she's a nurse line. She ran along that. But the bottom line is that she didn't know all. I mean, we didn't know everything about her. I would never have voted for her because she has R after her name. But people who were Democrats voted for her. I mean, Bob Eskridge lost by a very small percentage. Very
right.
small. There were Democrats that voted for her because they thought, what? You know, that she was this Saint Renee.
Well, yeah, but the
Until,
Democrats voted for McCrory. That's how he got in.
There you go. There's another one. He got in because, and Mecklenburg put him in. Mecklenburg
Absolutely.
Put him in.
But,
okay.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And they kept him out for two cycles. But then all
yep.
of a sudden, it's all right. But you see, the problem is, they didn't vote for him. They voted for Art Pope.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
voted for him. They voted for
exactly.
Duke Power. And Art
exactly.
Pope.
This is, I think there's...
Yep, it is. We have a Governor Pope right now.
Absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely it's, correct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know,
I think some people are I hate to say naive, but it's almost like...
Naive? Give me a break.
No, because some people think, they believe that, you know, it's going to turn out all right. And these people have their interests in mind somehow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that some people say, oh, well, he's from Mecklenburg. Well, then maybe he'll help Mecklenburg out, you know.
But he ain't helping us out.
He ain't helping anybody out, not Mecklenburg, not Raleigh, not any place. The only people he's helping out is Art Pope and the Koch brothers. That's
absolutely
it. Those are the only people. Yeah. And if we don't watch out, the Koch brothers will have bought themselves a country, not just a state, but a country.
Yeah. Right.
The Koch brothers and Art Pope and people of their ilk will ultimately become the emperors. The emperors.
And
of,
you know, we got enough problems
here.
Well, we got enough problems right here with the Republican Party taking over both houses. I mean, to get laws changed, and we have a problem now. And how long can you stay on for a few minutes? I want you to hear to the next guest a problem. And I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but you know Franklin County, right?
Yes.
Okay, well,
yes.
I want to hear a
of
story.
Course.
If you, I don't know if I told you about it or you heard about it, but it, and this story might be coming to an ending, but I want to bring on David Adams, who's a blog columnist, who is one of the major writers, brought everybody to the story, and this young man, Shannon Namodi, and his mother, because Shannon's in jail, and his mother, Elizabeth, who's also on. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you? Elizabeth? Is that Liz? David? Is that Elizabeth on the other side?
Yeah, this is Dave Adams. Mike, how are you today?
Fine. Did Elizabeth call in?
No, she didn't call. Actually, Miss Beth is at the Franklin County Courthouse taking care of some paperwork for those guys up north. So she will be calling in hopefully momentarily.
Okay, because the person that's on the 919 number, hello, who's this? Well, I don't know who they are. They're just listening. Anyway, so David, can you bring us up to date? Especially Grace Leem, I want to introduce you to David Adams. Grace Leem is the chair of the 8th Congressional District of the Democratic Party. Now, is Franklin County, no, that's not one of the counties in the 8th District, right?
No, it's not.
No, okay. All right, David, can you give our listening audience and Grace while she's on the line a little insight of the story that's happened for these young men?
Yes, the case of Shannon Amoni took place. It began back in August of 2012. This young man came to the aid of a white woman who had been shot in the face. Shannon was outside of his friend home in Youngsville, North Carolina, when he was startled by this occurrence at a couple houses down from where he was at. And the woman told him that she had been shot in the face and that her daughter was involved. Shannon, along with his friend Mike Young, were, you know, they comforted the woman. They stayed there, notified police and emergency personnel, stayed there with her. Now, subsequently, somehow, Shannon was charged with this crime. He's been locked up in the Franklin County Detention Center since that time. It's going on 17 months now. There are a lot of strange circumstances with this case. The district attorney, assistant DA in the case, actually filed a motion back on February 20th, 2013, requesting that the court take the case off of the docket. Okay? Shannon's case has been removed from the docket since yesterday was the one-year mark of his case having been removed from the docket, but he's still in custody. This is a serious violation of his constitutional rights. This is actually, you know, a human rights case. This young man is being essentially held in infinity for a crime for which a substantial degree of evidence exists that demonstrates this young man did not do this to this woman.
This is unbelievable. This is America. This is not supposed to happen here.
Listen, I sent it out on my Facebook. This is Guantanamo Bay, Franklin County, North Carolina. It's a violation of the 6th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. He can't even see his mother.
Oh,
they have no witnesses. The woman who shot is no longer in the same town. The daughter, who was supposed to be involved in it, I have no idea. Have you heard any whereabouts where the daughter is, David?
Well, when I interviewed her, from my interactions with Rhonda McLean and I guess another gentleman who identified himself as her son, my interaction with them on the Franklin County News Online website on Facebook, they indicated to me that she has been subsequently, her case has been disposed of in the juvenile courts down there, and that she's actually serving her sentence for her role in this particular crime. Now, when I interviewed Rhonda McLean, you know, I think about maybe a month and a half ago, she told me that her daughter was still incarcerated. All right, now, there's no way of determining this because she's a minor, and
right.
We wouldn't be able to get any public record related to her case.
And has it ever been determined why this daughter fingered Shannon, who called the police and help the woman?
Well, first of all, Mike, we have to clear this up, okay? The daughter never fingered Shannon, nor did the victim ever finger Shannon in this case. That's why this case is so bizarre. The initial police reports, the primary police reports from Detective Baird of the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, as well as Lieutenant Mitchell from the Youngsville Police Department, their police reports indicate that this lady's told them, okay, that someone, not Shannon Amoni, someone,
okay,
assaulted her. Okay, and then if you look at the reports, she gave two different variations, one to Barrett and one to Little. In one instance, she says that she was coming out of her bedroom, which is on the second floor, and someone came out of a closet and struck her in the head with a pole. Okay? Then she told Little that she came downstairs. She thought she saw a man in her home, okay?
Right.
And she went down to investigate it, and someone jumped from behind a sliding door and hit her head with a pole. So when you say someone, you're essentially saying that you don't know who this person is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it was the Youngsville Police and the Franklin County Sheriff's Department who determined, you know, in an 11-hour period from the time the crime actually occurred until the time they brought the kid into custody, okay, that they, somehow they determined that Shannon was involved in this. Okay?
No.
We have to correct this. The woman nor her daughter ever implicated this kid in a crime.
Wow, okay. That's even worse
now than I
thought.
Unbelievable. That's even worse.
So how do they know the daughter was involved?
Well, she did confess to her role in it because she had been soliciting someone to kill her mother on Facebook a couple of weeks prior to the incident occurred. Okay,
ah.
She was soliciting someone. The mother is running, you know, this is not public radio, so I can go in depth about this whole situation. Now, the mother, Rhonda McClain, this victim, this white woman who says who they're saying that Shannon shot in the face, she is not a dentist. She doesn't have a medical degree or a medical license. However, somehow she's a partner in a dentist's office down there. Okay, and she apparently keeps a lot of cash in her home. They were supposed to have taken, the people that shot her were supposed to take $65,000 from the home. Okay, and that's what this was all about. It was about getting the money. All right, and
so
somehow the young daughter.
So let me get this straight. The daughter posts on Facebook that she wants someone to kill her mama because she's really after the money. The $65,000. That's kind
this
of it
correct.
In a nutshell.
That's
this
in
is
a
correct.
Nutshell.
That's it in a nutshell. First, what a rocket scientist, right? Let's post on Facebook that I want somebody to kill my mama. Holy yoy.
I mean,
they have essentially no proof. Where do we stand right now with this case?
Well, the way we stand right now, he does not have it. If you go to the North Carolina court management system docket, there's no case in there. He doesn't have a court date. The kid's just being held in infinity, okay? His lawyer, the family paid a $50,000 retainer for a lawyer for this scumbag, Mike Pinkelsom, okay, who has done nothing for this kid. He's done everything he has done has hindered the case. He hasn't even been in the Cedar Boy. The last time he went and see Shannon, he threatened him and told him that if you talk to your mother or anyone else about this case and try to get another attorney, I'm going to help the prosecution convict you and make sure you get 30 years in prison.
Oh, I hope somebody takes his bar license away.
There is an active case on him at the North Carolina State Bar.
Now, and he and Grace, he works for a large, well-known law firm.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, really?
But, you know, the Franklin County is like Mississippi Burning. It might as well be. You know.
All of it, whether the lawyer is the first man, the witnesses, the daughter then. If there is a case, if there is evidence, if there is any shred of anything, it should just be law, right?
Right.
They're holding them in solitary. You can't see anybody in this mother, like it's a terrorist.
Right.
Why not proceed? If you're going to charge it, then do it.
Because they don't want it to go to court. That's right. They don't want it to go to court.
No, they don't want it to go to court. Because they don't have anything, okay? They don't have any evidence. You know, there are a lot of dynamics in this particular case, and it really points to the Franklin County Sheriff's Office. Now, you know, I got a red flag early on when I found out that this gentleman, this deputy sheriff, his name is Ralph Umkowitz. He was the person who was the complainant on the arrest warrant for Shannon Imhotep. All right. Now, he's not even assigned to that area. He's way up in Bunn, like two or three counties, towns over. You know, and I thought it was strange that he's not listed as an affiant in any of the affidavits pertaining to this particular case. However, somehow he went into before a court official, before a judge, and swore out a warrant under oath to bring this kid into custody. Now, I've never seen this. You know, I've never seen a police official who wasn't even involved in a case swear out a warrant for someone. You know, and then where are the statements of charges?
How did he get involved?
You know, and see, that's the other part of it that we don't know. And this guy is a rookie officer. Okay, so as I've already outlined on the blog, I believe that he was just simply directed by someone within management to do this. Okay, because he charged Shannon. Not only did he charge Shannon with assault with a deadly weapon and attempted murder, but he also charged the kid with larceny of a .22 caliber rifle. Okay. But if you go and look at the search and seizure log from the home, which is 109 Sheeran Court up there in Youngsville, you'll see that the cops seized a volume of guns from that home. And the .22 caliber rifle that Omco is charged Shannon with is in the seizure log. So that right there underscores the fact that this guy couldn't have been actively involved in this case whatsoever.
Wow.
He was the guy that called the police and was standing beside her, so he would have been holding the gun.
So how did this man, how did Shannon commit the robbery, shoot the mother, steal the money, hide the money, put the gun back before the police came there to help him with her?
It's the single bullet theory. It's the single bullet theory all over again.
Yeah, but isn't that guy dead? Didn't he die? What's the name? He's dead now, ain't he? He's dead. Oh, the single African theory. This is another one. Now I get it. But can you imagine?
Yeah, all right.
Now, can you imagine, Grace, and I know you can, this is taking place here in the 21st century. Thomas, are you one who read to me last week that North Carolina, the average wait time is 552 days? Did you read that to me? 552.
That's almost 2 years.
That's a regular case. Okay.
Wait 2 years.
But the law is it over 70 days? Did you tell me that, David? That it has to be 70 days, and the law says you got to go to a trial?
Well, that's the constitutional. That's a part of the constitutional. That's the standard as far as under the 6th and 14th Amendment. Now, your constitutional rights is applied with the 6th Amendment through the 14th Amendment. Okay, the standard is 70 days. All right. Now it's been over a year, so now that should trigger the presumption that Shannon's 6th Amendment rights have been, violated. Now, the state of North Carolina, as we've already discussed, no longer has a speedy trial statute. Back in 1989, for whatever reason, the state legislature, your lawmakers, repealed that. Okay? So you don't have a situation, you don't have that kind of statute down there that would cause a person to be brought into trial. Most states, it's between 90 and 180 days. So the state guidelines say that it should be 70 days. This kid's been locked up for over 17 months. Okay, we're going on a year and a half now.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going on a year and a half. This guy's been locked up. The state wants to take the prosecutor has taken the case off of the docket, which is essentially unheard of. Because usually when you take a case off of a docket, you're saying that the case has been no process, or the charges have been dropped. And every agency that we've talked to, every person that we've spoken to regarding this case, when we tell them this, they say, well, did they drop the charges? No, they didn't drop the charges. They actually put the stuff on microfiche and placed it in the archives. But the kid's still locked up in jail. He's been held hostage in a Franklin County jail down there in Franklin County, Lewisburg, North Carolina.
I mean,
this is something that they do in third world nations like South America. Where they
in Franklin County. Is that a third world nation?
Where they used to disappear people.
Yes.
This is what happened. This kid has just disappeared, and they just hope that everybody didn't notice.
And why is it, David, that he is in 23-hour lockup?
Well, the mother has been repeatedly trying to get in there to see her son. There is some dynamic that's going on between the sheriff's office and that county jail administration, okay, as well as his own attorney, okay, because the mother has repeatedly gone down there to see him, and she's been told that your son doesn't want to see you. And she said, well, why is he in segregation? Why is he on lockup? And they said, they gave her the rationalization that there was a influx of violent, very violent criminals there. Shannon and quite a other few young people there don't appear to be, you know, the kind of, they're cut from that particular mold of people. So to protect them, they're putting them in segregation. Okay? Now, when you do that, he's locked up for 23 hours and only let out 1 hour a day. But I know that there's got to be something else going on. I've been told by an attorney down there, I don't want to say his name, but he says that this kid is being beaten down. Okay? They're trying to break him, trying to make him confess to these charges and cop to a deal. The prosecutor has even been to the county jail without the presence of his own attorney to solicit a plea deal from this kid. Okay? So there's some strange dynamics going on here.
Is the 23-hour lockup to prevent his mother from seeing him?
Well, the thing is, I mean, usually when you're in segregation, they don't allow you to have visitation. But other people have called down on her behalf. They've even called the sheriff. You know, attorneys that are familiar with the sheriff's department have called and have gotten her in, you know, in the past. And when she got in, she said, I never told you that. The kid was so glad to see his mom. She said that she hugged him so tight, you know, he didn't want to let her go. And he said, Mom, I would never say that. I would never say that I didn't want to see you. So they're doing this, okay? They're taking this young man who has no history, no criminal record. He has no experience with the penal system down there. And you can just imagine what that kind of confinement would do to the mind, especially a young person, okay,
right.
In this particular situation. And it appears this appears to be indigenous to the state of North Carolina, at least in Franklin County, where they're holding people, they're taking people's cases off of the docket, and they're holding them for an indefinite period of time. You know, I mean, this is a serious situation.
Hold on a minute. I think I have Elizabeth on the other phone. Elizabeth, is that you?
That's me. Oh, my gosh, guys. I've just come out of the Franklin County Clerk of Court office. I was scanning in my son's records again. And, oh, my God. Oh, my God, these guys are not playing with their lives. They're making whoppers on top of whoppers. Oh, my God. That's all I can say. Oh, my God. This is ridiculous. These are grown adults. They're supposed to be grown adults. They're acting like children, tripping over each other, trying to create a myth that cannot exist in this world, maybe in an alternate universe, but not on this earth.
Well, what's the latest? Tell us the latest.
One of the things I've seen a document from the attorney of record saying that my son has no interest in being free. My son has no interest in having a speedy trial. This is after my son wrote a letter to the attorney in his own handwriting. This wasn't a dictated letter. My son wrote a letter saying that he wants a trial. Then the attorney comes and says, oh, please ignore the young man. He does not want a trial. Listen to me. Don't listen to him. That was one of the weird things.
Elizabeth, now wait a minute. Are you telling me that
they asked him,
and he said he wants a speedy trial, but the lawyer says he don't want a speedy trial?
There you go.
So is he not responsible for what he's saying? That means he needs a court-appointed psychiatrist, then.
He needs some serious help. That's what it is. I know what my son says, and I know where my son stands, and my son has indicated on multiple occasions where he stands on the issue. The other thing is when this story first came into the public, we tied the crime that was through witnesses and various accounts, you know, picture evidence. We tied this crime to a gentleman by the name of DJ Chalk and his brother Stephen Chalk. All of a sudden, voila, in the files, oh, here is a conversation between DJ and my son. And no, they're not asking for a 22 caliber rifle. It is DJ, it is my son asking for a shotgun. So was this woman shot with a shotgun or a 22 caliber rifle? Someone, please tell me. And how come it is just a statement that this thing exists? There is no printout from the Facebook page of this conversation. They have said there is a Facebook search warrant now that exists between my son and the victim's daughter, and the FBI says there is nothing. There's no communication, nothing between my son and this girl. But all of a sudden, we have DJ Chalk showing up on the scene. This young man hasn't been arrested, by the way. Showing up on the scene with a three-line conversation between him and my son for a shotgun, not a 22 caliber rifle.
Okay, so how did this boy...
Is this the same boy that has his Facebook pictures everywhere with him with the money? Is this the same kid?
Yes, that's the same one.
Okay.
So, I
did it, I should be arrested.
Right.
Here's the money, and yet...
Is that still on Facebook?
That picture's online.
See if it's still online.
But, so this...
Please, go through DJ's Facebook. You will not find this conversation. I've gone through that page thousands of times. Back to front.
Okay, so,
this conversation does not exist.
In order for him to have a conversation with this boy, in order for Shannon to have a conversation with this boy, he'd have to get a response from Shannon, right?
Thank you.
A response from Shannon?
There is nothing from Shannon. This conversation that they're saying exists does not exist. They don't even have a printout. You know how you pull up a page on Facebook and you can print that page out on the internet?
Right.
That conversation does not exist even in the files. All we have is an entered statement saying that there is a conversation, but the actual conversation is not printed from the internet. It does not exist.
Well, first I would like to know how Shannon, if this happened around the time that the crime occurred, I would want to know how Shannon did this, whether he did it from a computer inside of the Young family home or some type of mobile device. Shannon didn't have a cell phone, so you know he didn't do it on a mobile device. So apparently he must have communicated with this boy from a computer inside of the Young family home if he did this. You know, this is completely bizarre. It just makes no sense whatsoever.
They are trying to build... Oh, I wish that was the end of the ridiculousness in here. I wish that was the end of the ridiculousness. I have found attached to my initial habeas corpus application was like a 3, maybe 4-page document, you know? But right now, what is sitting in there on record as my habeas corpus document is like a... as my initial habeas corpus document has a story from a website that, you know, the responses, you know, this is how I know they know how to print Facebook responses. The people who responded on this website were very, very angry at the white population in this county and talked about racism in America in very ugly ways. That is what they went and attached to my original 4-page habeas corpus. They went and attached those answers off of Facebook, but they cannot go and attach the conversation between DJ and my son supposedly having.
What bearing was the conversation, say for a forum thread discussion, what bearing would that have on Shannon's habeas corpus claim? What bearing would that have, and why would anyone attach that to the habeas corpus?
Have no idea. These guys are worse than a kangaroo court. This is Ringling Brothers on drugs. It's a true circus that That makes no sense. And the thing is, it's my son's life on the balance.
Are you telling me that the supporting documentation which was attached to the habeas corpus, which I have a copy of, is no longer there, but rather these racist comments from a website was the documents that were attached?
There you go. Bingo.
They changed the documents?
Yes, sir. I have sent Mr. Adams, and I'll send you, Mr. Lawson, a copy of the same. Yes, sir. They changed the document itself. And thank God, on the day that I filed, the assistant clerk of court person made sure I copied exactly what I filed, and it's got a line through it to make sure you know it came off of their machine, of everything I filed. And there was nothing about these racist internet comments on there. Okay? So now they're going to have to say who attached that document on there. Who did it?
Doesn't that document have to be signed by a judge?
Or something. Or
David?
Something.
Well, no, actually, they're both, Judge Hopgood and both Judge Johnson have already issued their orders pertaining to the habeas. And those are separate affidavits, separate documents from her actual affidavit, habeas corpus affidavit that she filed on behalf of her son. These are three separate files you're talking about. You're talking about the actual document, which I know for a fact is about 4 or 5 pages, which is supporting documentation as to why Shannon is being held illegally. Then you would have a document from Judge Hopgood dismissing the habeas claim, and then you would have Judge Johnson with his own separate order. These are three separate documents that you're talking about here.
Yes, well, that I understand, but are we looking at these additional racist comments? What are they attached to?
They're attached to my paperwork, like paperwork I filed. So it's looking like I have no bloody sense that that's what I'd use to attach to a habeas, you know, a document going in front of a superior court judge. Heinous lies. I mean, not that lies. But this document I didn't file, you know?
Right.
I would never have brought something of that quality before any judge, you know?
Right.
And my stuff is double-spaced, justified, spell-checked, you know?
Well,
some kind of citation in my documentation pointing to please look at attached addendum whatever. You know, but somebody just felt, look, I'm going to go and find some of the venom being expressed on the internet about this and attach it to her document. Like, that is what she took to the judge, and that's why, you know, because, you know, the judge had no grounds for denying it. So maybe that is his attempt, or I don't know whose attempt, to give the judge some ground. I do not know. These guys are amazing in their creativity or lack thereof.
Let me just make a suggestion. Have a lawyer or have somebody look into it forensically. You can do so online to also see if these comments were posted after the time of the habeas corpus filing, because then that would be even further proof that it'd be impossible for you to attach them.
I would like to know what website it was from, where it came from, because obviously there has to be some relationship or correlation between those comments and the habeas if they attached it to it.
My son's channel has been all over the internet, all over, shared by so many, all over the internet. So I'm very sure they were able to find something somewhere that leaned in their favor in terms of radical racial slurs and comments. People are just fed up of what's going on in America, you know, and they have every right to express themselves as they see fit.
So it's always the it's not just the crime, it's the cover-up that gets you in trouble. And what they're doing now
is trying to cover.
Actively obstructing and altering and perjury, and it's going to cost them dearly.
Well, it's going to cost them dearly on many ends. The thing is, so where are we at now with anything that can help this situation out, Elizabeth?
Where we are now really is we have a set of, I don't know if Mr. Adams said that we do have someone looking into it. They're not from in-state, and they're going to try and locate somebody in-state to be the office they're working from. I do not know who you can write to, who you can tell. I have never in my life faced a situation this crazy. If I thought it was crazy, I don't know what to call it now. What do you call it now? You know?
Guantanamo.
Well, we might as well go on record and not talk circles around what's going on, the developments that are going on now. Mike and Tom, I think Mike's already aware of the fact that the Harvard Law Institute of Criminal Justice Institute has agreed to take Shannon's case. Okay, so you have the Harvard Law School up here in the state of Massachusetts in my region that are going to be picking up this case. Okay, and right now I think what's occurring is that there's some kind of partnership is being constructed with an attorney in the state of North Carolina who can actually practice or represent on behalf of the university. Okay, there are going to be students assigned to this case. So this is a situation that has gone to garner national attention. You're talking about one of the most prestigious law schools in the nation.
In the world.
Well, and well, hey, listen, and this ain't the first time. So, I mean, can you imagine all the cases we don't know this has happened to? I mean, because this seems to be so automatic with them, they don't realize, you know what Colonel Nathan Jessup said in A Few Good Men when he was confronted by Tom Cruise, you know, you're messing with the wrong Marine. Well, they just messed with the wrong Marine. And they are going to have a major problem. And we just hope that Shannon has the ability, the willpower, and the strength to not give in to what they're saying.
I think we can all write him a letter. Write a letter to him. Everyone who's listening, go to the website, get the address, write
can he, can he get letters? Are they screening his letters?
I know they're screening his letters. So all I tell people is write letters. Just say, you know, three things. We know you're in there. Do not give up. Help is on the way.
Okay. Well, what's the? Can you give us the address?
It's Shannon Nyamodi. That's NYAMODI at 285 T Kemp. That's KEMP Road in Lewisburg, North Carolina, 27549.
27549. Okay, give it to us one more time. Shannon Nyamodi at what?
285 T Kemp, KEMP Road, Lewisburg, North Carolina, 27549.
And we just put to who? Attention. Okay, good. I mean, every time I hear the word Lewisburg, every time I hear about that, it reminds me of every Southern movie I ever heard of. Lewisburg. You never see a Southern movie without the name Lewisburg in it. To me, anyway, it just jumps out of me. So it's like an old chain gang, Lewisburg.
What's going on here. I just know my son needs to get out of here.
When is the last time you saw him? When is the last time you saw Sonny?
I have not seen him since the end of January. Since the end of January there, I haven't seen him.
Now, do they permit you to see him? Because I was
no.
under the assumption that you see him. They don't?
No, they don't. I only see him through someone finagling a favor here and there, you know. That's how I always get to see him, man.
And what's the reason?
No reason is ever given. Do they have reason for anything here? No, they just do it. Who are you going to tell?
This is just like every single Southern movie you have ever seen since the history of movies. It's like every one. It's like every single one.
You know, but the interesting thing is, Mike, your show's platform is founded upon, you know, giving, you know, potential political factions the opportunity to voice and state why they want to represent the people of their various jurisdictions and districts down there. Okay, what are they doing? Okay, what are the people who want to be in office doing to rectify the situation, to get this kid's case either in trial or get him released? Okay,
right.
And then what are they doing to see how many other Shannon Amodis there are in the Franklin County Jail or within other correctional facilities in the state of North Carolina? What are these people, you know, who want to come on the show and promote, you know, their platform about what they want to do in a political office down there? What are they doing?
Well, you just put it out there, and I'm going to ask each one of them when they come on for now, because, see, this is the beginning of the election season.
Because y'all have been involved in this for quite a while, and we are new to it. But, Mr. Adams, do you know if y'all have contacted other organizations that work in this area, like the Southern Poverty Law Center, especially centers that work strictly to help minorities in situations like this?
I mean, Ms. Beth has been in contact with a number of organizations down there. She's got the door shut in her face. I mean, she even went to the highest law enforcement official in the state, Roy Cooper's office, okay? And some gentleman who worked in the public safety division or department of the Attorney General's office by the name of Tom Jones, he called her and told her that he couldn't believe that anyone was being held in a jail in the state of North Carolina that long without a trial. So therefore, there was nothing he could do for her.
His name is Tom Jones. And he works in what?
He's public safety department of the Attorney General's office.
Public safety. Okay.
Yeah.
You get a call.
I called him. I personally called him myself, left him my information, and asked him to call me back because I wanted him to go on record to say that there was nothing that he could do for this mother. He didn't even investigate whether or not the kid was deemed being detained or whether he had a case on a docket there.
Well, what is, do you have his number handy? Or if you don't have it, text me it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I still have his number somewhere around. I'll get that to you.
You texted me, I want to call him Monday morning. I want to find out what the story is, why the Attorney General's public safety officer has not even investigated this.
And this is the thing. A lot of this new documentation that is in Shannon's folder was not there when I initially made a copy of the entire file. It was not in there. And it's a good thing that this is a small town clerk of court office. All the ladies remember when I was there going through it the first time. And they're like, yeah. I was like, could you tell me when this was added in? And they really didn't want to answer. I said, okay, that's fine. Then if they did have reason to release Shannon before the addition of all this stuff, this is a lot of the missing paperwork, the SBI reports and all that. If they did not have reason before to release him, they sure enough do now.
Well, Miss Beth, well, you and I talked about that because we knew that once I put it out there, this last article that I did when I talked about the Franklin County Sheriff's Department reports, you know, all the stuff that they collected from the crime scene, the forensics, you know, all the stuff that was supposed to be in the file to present a case against this kid wasn't there. We put it out there on the Internet. Okay, so now they have to cover their tracks and put something in it and make like, you know, that we don't know what we're talking about. But here's the thing. Now, you don't have to even ask a court clerk when it was put in there because everything in the file should be time, date, stamped with the court clerk's seal or with their stamp. Okay?
That's right.
So now, if none of these documents, have that date stamp on there, then, you know, I mean, you can't even really, you know, that right there lets you know when it was put in there. I mean, that it wasn't put in there before all those other things that we talked about occurred. You know?
Now, I will let you know that some of these documents do have a time date stamp on it, and some of them have a rubber stamp, time date stamp.
A rubber stamp.
And instead of an automatic clock, you know, stamp, they have a rubber stamp.
Rubber time stamp is one of those things where you can manually set the date yourself. Okay, and put that on there.
It's not legal to bring it to court. That's not legal for court. You have a time date stamp by a machine.
Usually the court system uses a machine. So this is what I am thinking. I'm thinking some of this paperwork was filed on time. But at some point, someone so fit to remove anything that could immediately exonerate Shannon even further. Someone so fit to pull all that paperwork out.
That's that exculpatory evidence that we were talking about. You know, that's the exculpatory evidence, you know, from the FBI, like the fingerprints, okay, and any DNA that they obtained.
But now that the detective got on it, oh my gosh, OMG, the paperwork miraculously reappears. There it is, you know, like it's been there the whole time.
So you have, Elizabeth, you have the original file then, because you said you copied it.
Yes, I put it online. Everything I have online, that was all that was there in that document.
Anything that was added, anything that's there now was added after that file was in lockbox, right?
There is still paperwork missing. They have done a good job trying to fill stuff in. I mean, it's like become like an 150-page file worth of work plus, you know, 150 pages or more plus worth of work all of a sudden appeared out of nowhere, and there's still information missing. There is still information missing. And I am astounded that they have the guts to wake up every morning and show themselves up as officers of the court, defenders of the laws of the state of North Carolina and the United States Constitution every day after doing this kind of calamity work. This is something, you know, maybe you should see the third grade. Someone should have told them in third grade, you can't do work like this. You can't do this is sloppiness.
Criminals will do what criminals do, and it doesn't matter if they're wearing a badge or not. They
have done this for so long. It just is automatic with them, and they don't think about it. It's like turning the light on, you know. Sometimes I go out of my house, and I don't remember if I put on the alarm system. And I have to come back in because it's so automatic with me. I do it, but I forget that I do it. I have to come back. Did I put it on? I don't know. Let me go back inside. So the thing is, it's the same thing with them. This is so automatic, changing files around, that they don't even remember if they do it or not.
I am seeing the names of judges I didn't even know had touched this case. You know, what's the name of the judge? Judge Orlando out of Durham. What's his last name?
I have no idea. David?
I'm not familiar with this guy.
Judge Orlando, the one that the DA went after in Durham.
No idea.
Are you talking about Kristen Ruth? Are you talking about Chris and Ruth?
No. This is totally unrelated. I think Mr. Lawson may remember this. Do you remember there was a judge in Durham that had a disagreement with the DA in Durham, and they took the DA out of office? It was a female DA. This was about a year or so ago, or maybe say two years.
I did hear something about that. It's going to take you some time, but I do remember that. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah.
Apparently, that judge, his signature has shown up in my son's special paperwork. That was never there before. You know.
Is that even his district?
Apparently, you know, his signature is in my son's file. You know.
Yeah, but this judge. But it was in Raleigh. I don't know if Raleigh covers all that area. I don't know if it covers that area.
We've gone from having one or two Judge Stevens signatures to having 14, 15, or 16 Judge Stevens signatures on documents. You know?
Uh-huh. Yes.
It's like Judge Stevens just sat there and signed a whole bunch of documents, and then they're put in my son's folder.
Well, that could very well be that his administrative clerk said, oh, just sign these papers, and he said, okay, I got to get out of here, and he signed them all and left and never read any of them. I mean, they do it all the time in the assembly. They do it all the time. They don't see none. The administrators come and say, hey, sign here, and then they go golfing. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that happened.
Well,
this is all the time in government. Republicans said they signed for different things for Obama, and now they're trying to say, oh, I don't remember signing that. It must have been in with a lot of other papers. I mean, so I wouldn't doubt it. But I'm not saying that he didn't read it. I mean, he very well could have read it and said, yeah, all right, let me put this in here. Let me sign it. So I'm not saying they're guilty or not, but this happens so much, it's like turning off the light switch.
It is so amazing that, there are judges whose names I had not seen in Cannon's documents. Now we have documents from Judge Hobgood that is not dealing with the habeas corpus. As I was under the impression that Judge Hobgood was through the habeas corpus paperwork. But now we have paperwork with Judge Hobgood's signature showing up. You know, I'll call them the lost files. Among the lost files that reappeared, you know.
These files you're saying that appeared, they were not in the original file folder? Or they were?
No, sir. Photocopied that file folder from cover to cover.
Right.
There wasn't that much in there from cover to cover. I photocopied. And when I saw sheriff's reports missing, I asked, where are the sheriff's reports? When you see certain things missing, you ask, where is it? Okay, so this is information I knew was not there. I had raised the alarm about not being there. I'd asked the assistant clerk of court, I'd asked the sheriff's department for their information, and it just wasn't there. But OSC, we have...
Yeah, Mike, the last blog article I published, I had called for a prosecution of... the Franklin County Sheriff Jerry Jones, as well as the assistant district attorney in that Sellers, okay, because of the very things that she's saying now. These documents, all of this evidence, which should have been culpable to keep this kid and justify keeping this kid locked up, weren't there, okay? And my thing was, if these documents don't exist, they know this. And why haven't they released this kid? Why haven't they dropped the charges and released this kid? So my thing was, if they know that there's no such reports exist and they keeping this kid locked up, then that's suppression of exculpatory evidence, okay? And that's why I called for them to be prosecuted for doing so. And I believe in the time frame of that last article and now for her going out there looking for this paperwork, this stuff just suddenly reappeared in the file.
Well, go ahead.
On the paperwork as assistant DA on the case. It is Annette Sellers. I did not see the other district attorney, assistant district attorney's name. I did not see Sam Karen, who is the elected official DA's name on it. I saw the name Annette Sellers. So,
The things that I'm not understanding here and why a judge would say okay to a DA that says I need a delay. Okay, the Sixth Amendment specifically says length of delay for a year or more from the date on which a speedy trial should be made of the day is from the date of arrest or indictment, whichever occurs first, presumptively prejudicial, but the court has never explicitly ruled that any absolute time limit applies. Okay, the second is reason for delay. The DA has to give a reason, and it may not excessively delay the trial for its own advantage. That means
right.
You can't delay,
right.
You can't delay
right.
The trial. They're not ready. Okay.
Right. They're not ready. Well, clearly they weren't ready. But this is what Beth. This is right. I'm glad you read that, Mike, because that was all. This is outlined in the habeas that was presented to both Judge Hobgood and Judge Johnson. Okay. You know, a judge has to give. If you give a continuance like that, he has to establish on record, you know, a timetable when it's going to come back, and he also has to establish the reason for doing so. Okay, to not do that, it gives the prosecution an unfair tactical advantage. And that's what you just read in the Sixth Amendment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, a time and manner in which the defendant has asserted his right. If a defendant agrees to the delay when it works to his own benefit, he cannot claim later that he was unjustly delayed. So the thing is, it's up to the defendant. It's not up to the DA.
Right.
DA cannot do.
Right. And that's why we call to bear. That's why we call to bear that motion order to have the case taken off of the docket. Okay?
Right.
Because, like I said, Mike, if you look at that thing, it's a pre-printed form. With just the case numbers and handwriting, then you got the kids, you got the state of North Carolina versus, and then you have his name written in handwriting, then you have the date that it was filed or ordered, and the judge's alleged signature. Okay? So apparently someone has a pre-printed form that you just fill out to take a case off the docket. So this is why I'm saying that this is something that's indigenous to either Franklin County, the Superior Court in Franklin County, or the Superior Court for North Carolina in general. You know, they're taking people's cases off of the docket.
I have said this since I've been here. This is Mayberry on steroids. I have said this. And the people say, well, look, you don't like it, you can go back to New York. Hey, wait a minute. This is the 21st century. This isn't the 19th century anymore. And he says here, the Equal Protection Clause may come into play when it requires each state to provide equal protection under the law to all people within its jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And we that this the 14th Amendment is in clear violation, but the Sixth Amendment, all four points of the Sixth Amendment are being violated.
Yeah.
I think what we have to realize is that I do not believe that the prosecution of Franklin County or many of the people who are in charge of the laws in North Carolina consider us as African Americans to be people. They say this law applies to people. Why are
now
you demanding the law?
Yeah. Well.
Wow.
Then.
Wow.
Well, then you're talking about. You're really talking about the 14th Amendment. Then. You're really because in July 9th, 1868, as one of the Reconstruction Amendments, this was made. The amendment addresses citizenship rights and equal protection of the law, and was proposed in response to issues related to former slaves following the American Revolution. The amendment
exactly.
was particularly in southern states, which were forced to ratify it in order for them to regain representation in Congress. So
yes.
This is where we're at with this. And there is no way any judge who isn't a Confederate or operating under the Confederate flag can ignore any one of these. I mean, it's unbelievable. It says a delay of a year or more from the date on which the speedy trial right attaches, whichever is first, an arrest or an indictment, presumptively prejudicial.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, this is what it's about.
It's clear. And that's why you look at that, you look at the 6th and 14th Amendments, and then you look at North Carolina General Statute 17-5, where it gives the defendant or the person for which the relief of a habeas corpus is sought for, it gives them the right to go in and try to present this before the courts to challenge the lawfulness of their detention. And then it also says, and I'm not reading from constitutional law, I'm talking about the North Carolina General Statute 17-5. It also calls for any person on behalf of that person in custody to go and present the habeas corpus. Now, both of these judges, I doubt very seriously if they were just simply ignorant to North Carolina General Statutes. They ruled that the mother didn't have legal standing in the case and did not have the right to file legal documents on her son's behalf, which is clearly bullcrap when you look at North Carolina General Statutes. You know, I mean, you mean to tell me both of these Superior Court judges didn't know general North Carolina state law when she presented the habeas? So that's why I said this $2,500 penalty, these guys are going to pay it, both of them. Hobgood and Johnson is going to pay this kid $2,500 because that's the penalty aspect, okay? I think it's 17-6 or 7 that says they have to pay the kid if they knowingly reject the habeas, knowing that he was entitled to it. Because you've just clearly read the 6th and 14th Amendment, okay, where they're violent. This kid's been locked up for 17 months. That's clearly over a year.
Absolutely correct.
No, the Johnson, the document he received, the very first page, the cover page, in double space, extra bold, almost, I think it was 24 font ink, was said, and North Carolina General Statute 17-5 that states exactly that not only does the person seeking the habeas have the right to file the paperwork, but anybody in their behalf. That was the very first document on the top. And he cannot claim that he did not know because that was the document number one on the top. So I don't know what their reasoning is going to be.
Well, you know, one other thing, the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, in all criminal cases, prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by the law, and to inform of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Criminal offenders have a right to a speedy and fair trial, okay, and laid down by a four-part case study. Now, the problem is, just like you said, how can any lawyer, judge, whether this man is guilty or not? It says in Strunk versus U.S. 412, U.S. 434 in 1973, the Supreme Court ruled that if reviewing court finds that a defendant's right to a speedy and fair trial was violated, the indictment must be dismissed or the conviction
with
overturned.
Prejudice.
The court held that since the delayed trial in the state action which violates the defendant's rights, no other remedy would be appropriate. Thus, a reversal or dismissal of the criminal case on a speedy trial grounds means that no further prosecution for the alleged offense can take place.
Yes.
Even if he's guilty, they have to release
him. Yep.
Even if he's guilty.
Yes.
So where is their case? Now, is this the reason why they have done this so often? Because they didn't have Elizabeth Crudup around. They didn't have a mother around to help these children like Elizabeth. Is this the reason why they're still doing it?
We place our trust so much in these attorneys. We place our trust that they will be executing the law as it is written or as it is implied. But these guys, all they do is shuck and jive among each other. You know, God bless you if you feel you got a fair deal, you know. Who looks, because in fact, that section you just read out, that too was attached to the habeas filing. That was attached to Judge Johnson's habeas filing.
Yeah.
So he can say, I made sure he didn't even have to go looking for the law. I printed out the law and attached it. Because he was saying, look, this person doesn't know, don't let him waste time going to open up books. Let me bring the sections to him. Let him read it. And he refused to look at it. He refused to read it. He refused to comply with the law.
And who is
acting? The North Carolina people? Whose behalf was he acting when he refused Shannon's habeas? On whose behalf was he acting? Because it's sure enough was not the North Carolina laws. It's sure enough was not the North Carolina citizens. And it's sure enough was not in the interest of justice, the way he reacted to that second habeas. It sure enough was not. But
Is it a fact now that they're in so deep they don't know what direction to go?
That's what it apparently is, Mike, because they have no cover now. They have no cover. Okay, because we have two rulings from two Superior Court judges shooting down the habeas. The first document, I didn't get a chance to get the addition that Ms. Crudup added to the habeas that was presented to Judge Johnson, but they were, in their entirety, they were similar, okay? In the arguments, the prosecution of the habeas were similar. And she has decisions from these judges now with their rulings, and their rulings on their face were frivolous. They didn't list any North Carolina statute. They didn't any established case law justifying denying this kid his habeas relief at all. So yeah, they have nowhere to run, nowhere they can run. Okay, the cover has been pulled off of this practice of what's going on in North Carolina Superior Court. Okay, and the fact that Harvard Law, now they don't take very many cases for their kids, for their students, okay, but the fact that they chose this case, in my opinion, speaks volumes, okay, in terms of the kind of, judicial policies that are occurring in the court system down there, you know, so I agree with you, Mike, they have nowhere to go.
Yeah, I think they're backed into the corner now because they never dreamed that the snake might bite them. They always stick their hand in the...
Just like you said, they didn't think the light would be turned on. They
right.
Anyway,
yeah.
Here's a question just to ask. I know we had a segment at one time with Reverend Sharp, but, you know, the Calvary's on the way. We have Harvard Law now involved. We've been doing everything we can to just broadcast the news.
Yeah, well, I'm speaking to Tom Jones on Monday, and I hope he is in English. Go ahead.
Really, there's nothing they can do. So what are we doing to get more national attention, to get all of the news shows down here and get this on every station all the time?
Well, Tom, I think that once a Harvard Law actually officially takes the reins, establishing an attorney in the state of North Carolina that they can use as a parent for their students to pursue this, I think once that materializes, we can then solicit, coverage from national media outlets.
And also, I want to try and organize just a day of prayer for Shannon, just one prayer vigil for that young man, for us to come together as a show of force against the insanity that's going on in Franklin County. I'll have to check in with Lewisburg to see what their permit policies are and also, you know, check, you know, what day we'd have good weather, et cetera. But I would love to do that just one time for Shannon in the very near future.
Why couldn't we have it at one of the churches? Then you wouldn't need a permit.
I'll have to establish where one is near here that would be receptive to this, you've got to remember which county I'm in. It's in Franklin County. You know, let me find one.
I can't find out. Have you spoken? I think you have spoken to, I don't even remember if you have, Representative Bobby Richardson.
Very briefly, I spoke to the office. I may not have spoken to him personally, but I spoke to his office.
I know her, and I spoke to her about this case. She was in Minnesota at the time, or on her way to Minnesota. And I spoke to her administrative sister, and she gave me some background on it. I'm going to speak to her again and let her know where this is going on. And I'm sure she or what's her name from Harnett County? I know somebody else. How far is Harnett County from you? It's not that far, right?
I actually live in Harnett County.
How far is Franklin? I can't remember.
About an hour and a half.
Oh, gee, that's too far. Okay. Yeah, we'll deal with Franklin County. I'll ask Bobby Richardson if there's a place there. The church.
Definitely.
Okay. And then we'll deal from there. I think she'll be back next week because I think she – I didn't know she said she was going to go for a week or what. I'm not sure. But I'll give her a call. I'll call her on the cell. But we need to inform everybody. I sent out a blast on the Facebook about this whole thing. We need to have a – we need to create – you have a website, a web page, right?
Yes, electbeth.wix.com/Shannon. That's Shannon. electbeth.wix.com/Shannon.
Oh, so that's on Wix.com, right?
Yes.
You have so. What is it now again? Say it one more time.
Elect. That's ELECTBETH. electbeth.wix.com/ Shannon.
Okay, good. All right, we'll put some stuff on there. I'm going to put that on my website, too. I'll capture that and put that on my website, and we'll put everything that you have on that page on my website, too, and then have it linked. And let's see what we can do from here. And I have some ideas of some lawyers, because I know quite a few judges, Supreme Court and otherwise, that could probably and might love to get involved. I will ask them over this weekend.
Wait a minute, Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson, please do not discuss this with any Supreme Court judge in North Carolina because they get the case.
No. I'm going to ask them to give me a lawyer.
All right, awesome. Awesome.
I'm going to ask them to send a lawyer that when the Harvard Law speaks to you about it, or you can speak to them, say, look, here's a couple. Deal with them, whoever you want. And they came highly recommended. I will talk to them as many as I can this weekend. I'll give we had one of the very good judge on earlier this afternoon, and I'll see what he recommends for us. And we'll see what we can do and what they have to do, and I'll have them get a hold of you, and then you can tell them what Harvard Law said and what they need and et cetera, okay? That's what we'll do.
Okay, thank you very much.
I want you to keep your chin up, Elizabeth. You are a very strong woman. And something is occurring, and I think this is going to be a major step, major step. And as Colonel Nathan Jessup said, they have effed with the wrong Marine this time. They've gone one black man too far.
I just want to get my little black kid back, you know. Just give me back my kid, and then, you know, let's continue from there. You know.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I want to thank you and David for everything that you're doing and letting us know what's going on. And we want to hear again from you next week. We want this on a weekly basis.
Thank you so much, and thank you again for this opportunity.
No problem. Every time I'm on, I want you there. And, David, I'm going to be calling Mr. Jones on Monday.
Okay. I'll make sure I get his number to you.
Hey, I will call him Monday and see what he says about this. What?
I'll remind any listeners to read more in-depth about this, if you were just hearing about it. David Adams has a fantastic blog. He's got a lot of details.
Mm-hmm.
All of this that we've been mentioning, talking about, he has in-depth reporting on www.peopleschampion.me. So check out his website.
That's right. Peopleschampion.me. Get all the scoop from David Adams. All right. I want to thank both of you. Keep strong, Elizabeth.
Right.
We'll be there. We're trying to get this Calvary to come in. And David, thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Always a pleasure, Mike.
Okay. Bye-bye. So.
You know what we need to do, Mike? We ought to come up with a T-shirt, bump sticker, or something like this that the proceeds can go to for maybe based on something of the, you know, I'm Namoti or kind of a Spartacus thing. I am Shannon type idea. You know, if they can disappear this child with no trial, no charges, no nothing, just take it off the docket and you into a hole where your mother can't even see you, you know, it could happen to anybody. So maybe we should come up with that.
This is what I'd like to hear after we get a hold of this lawyer who supposedly represented Chen.
This is the exception.
That's the wrong one. That's the wrong one. This is the one I want.
Colonel. You snotty little bastard.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
The court will wait for an answer.
If Lieutenant Kendrick gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, then why did he have to be transferred? Colonel, Lieutenant Kendrick ordered the code red, didn't he? Because that's what you told Lieutenant Kendrick to do.
Object!
And when it went bad, you cut these guys loose!
Your Honor,
you had Morgans inside a phony transport!
Your Honor, you doctored the logbook!
Then I can't
be! Coerced the doctor!
Consider yourself in contempt!
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled to.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it?
Well, can he handle the truth? No. When we get finished with that lawyer, we're going to ask him, can he handle the truth? And did he order this young man in jail? Did he take the $50,000 and run? Oh, he just took the $50,000.
I read on one blog somewhere that the money that was stolen, you know, that was the root cause of that the dollar supposedly hired people on Facebook to go shoot her mom. It vanished, right? The crime.
Mm-hmm.
But then later it was a statement that the money was recovered.
Yes, yes.
Now, from where and how?
It was recovered from an abandoned house. Someone gave a tip.
Oh.
And they found the money. Put money on it.
For a
yep.
Yeah.
That is it. That is it.
I wonder if it's been laundered or if you can pull a fingerprint off. Like,
yes. That's true. You think? Is that picture still on Facebook? And run to him.
And then he jumps out, wraps his head up,
calls the police, holds her to the gift, tells her it's home, make sure she's okay, gets her to the hospital.
This is a movie. I can see the book. I wish Elmo Leonard was alive. He'd be writing it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end. I'll see you next week. Okay. Adeline, take us out of here.